Giglio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 4 o'clock on a Wednesday night into Thursday. Coming up in a little bit, our good friend Kevin Powell is going to join us. He does sports on the Rokan Show every weekday afternoon here on WGN. He joins us usually once a month to talk all things sports. We're also going to talk about an elaborate pistachio scheme and 21 dumb schemes where people actually made money. Today in history is actually the first televised baseball game, so we're going to talk a little bit about that and some great sports moments in history as well. And more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and that's the Team Hochberg phone line. 312-981-7200. A quick update on my dad. He's still in the hospital. I know that people were, you know, asking me about it. My dad's still in the hospital. They are going to run more tests and the result of a second CAT scan. And he'll find out what's going on tomorrow. But he's still there. So we're hoping he gets to go home sometime tomorrow after they get the results of the second CAT scan they did on him. So he's just frustrated and he wants to get out of the hospital and go home. But he's still there. And, you know, my mom's obviously upset and I'm, you know, it's been a tense time. So anyway, thanks for the thoughts and the concern and all that stuff over my dad. Hopefully he'll be home tomorrow and, get better as soon as possible. So anyway, wanted to give you a quick update on that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay. My first guest is a regular guest on the show. He's great. He wrote for Mad Magazine. He wrote for Match Game and other game shows as well. And he's the Giz Whiz, and he loves gizmos and gadgets. It's Dick DiBartolo, and he's awesome. Hello, Dick.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, how are you, sir?
I am doing well, too. Thank you.
Yes.
A little annoyed that Tom said it's now $50 for me to be on this show, but I don't know how much longer I can do it.
Keeping busy, Dick? People sending you gizmos and gadgets and things like that?
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, it's bizarre now because, you know, CES 2021 is already canceled.
Right.
And every press event that I normally go to is, you know, being virtual events.
Right.
And it's not the same because, you know, you could go to, there was just an event a couple of weeks ago called Sweet Sweet, where it's all new toys. And I could go there with my spouse, Dennis, as cameraman, and come away with a dozen videos from my Gizwiz show. And now you just see the toys as someone demonstrates them in a room someplace, and you don't get to play with them, and so it's a bit of a hassle.
Yeah.
And I don't know what CES is going to be like, because there are hundreds of thousands of gadgets there. We'll be online probably for most of January and February to see everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, but you do get things sent to you, right, Dick?
Yes, I do. I tell companies, please not just to send stuff out of the blue. You know, my studio is a single studio apartment, and getting too much stuff that I can't use, it just is a mess here.
Yeah.
And also, everything I show on the air, especially ABC, I always call the manufacturer and say, listen, instead of returning this, I do a lot of work with little shelter, a no-kill animal shelter, and I provide a great many of their prizes for auctions. Can I just give it to them? Mm. And I think 100% of the time they say yes. Well, the problem is the shelter doesn't have a truck to come in yet, and so I now have 6 months of gadgets piling up that I would have sent out to them because they're not having their live auctions either.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, it's a mess.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And are you staying in mostly? Have no events to go to, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, the only time I ever really leave my apartment is when I come here to work, and that's pretty much it. So,
wow.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time at home. I was always a homebody anyway. You know what I mean, Dick? I didn't go out very much before all of this happened, so it's not a huge change. There it is. Dick, hang on, okay?
Did you ever do the show from home?
No. I always come down here, yeah. So, Dick, hang on, okay?
Yep, I will.
Dick DiBartolo is here, and he wrote for Mad Magazine, wrote for a bunch of game shows, including the classic Match Game, and he's the Gizwiz. He's into gizmos and gadgets, and he's been doing that for a while, and we'll tell you about the website and where you can see Dick on TV demonstrating some of these really cool gadgets. And we've got a whole list of crazy gadgets and gizmos that he's going to tell us about. And if you have a question or a comment, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio on WGN. Michael McDonald, man. That's the Doobies, though. Not Michael McDonald solo. Okay. Hello, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio here until 4 o'clock. And it's going to be a Thursday, so stay with us. After midnight, Kevin Powell's going to join us. He covers sports here on WGN on the Rokan Show. And we're going to talk all things sports coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. My guest right now, though, is Dick DiBartolo. He is the Gizwiz, and he's Mad's maddest writer. And we welcome Dick back to the show. Hello, Dick.
Hi, I'm back here, and happy to be here. Yeah.
Okay. Before we get to some of the gizmos, for people who might not have heard the story about how you actually began writing for Mad, it's really one of my favorites. Can you tell that story again, how you got started with Mad Magazine?
I was reading Mad in high school, and after about six or seven issues, I thought, I like reading this, but I also want to write this stuff. So I bought a book called Writer's Yearbook because I'd never submitted anything. And it said some magazines will only take stuff through an agent, and some magazines will accept it from anybody. So I quickly looked up Mad Magazine, and Mad Magazine said, yes, we read all submissions, but you have to send a self-addressed stamped envelope. If not, they'll just trash your submission if they don't want it. So I wrote a takeoff on a TV ad, and I sent it to them, and about a month later, my own envelope came back, and I thought, oh, it's not a little envelope with a check. But I opened the envelope, and I go to get out my rejected script, and it's a piece of cardboard, and scribbled on the cardboard, it says, ha, 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 thought this was your script being returned. Guess what? We bought it. Stapled to this cardboard is a check for $100. This is big money. This is back in like 65 or 2, something in there.
Yeah.
And it said, please call us because we want to have you do more work for Mad. And it was signed by Nick Meglin. And that started a 52-year career with Mad.
Isn't that nice?
So, yeah.
You wrote some of my favorite parodies, especially the movie parodies that you did. You wrote some of my favorite. What were some of the ones that that you wrote?
The Poop Side Down Adventure.
Right.
Towering Sterno. and you know, Mad is publishing now, but it's all repeats. And the interesting thing is that I get a fair number of emails from subscribers. It's not on newsstands anymore either.
Right.
It's either comic book stores or subscribers. And I get a fair amount of emails from fans saying, you know what? This is not bad. I like that I can read some things I read years ago and find new jokes I didn't understand when I was young. Or, you know, I totally missed that issue, and I enjoy seeing old material repeated. Like, the issue that just came out is October, and in that I have Teen Rage Moolah Nitwit Turtles 2. Okay. And Ek-Men. You know, Mad always used the word Ek.
Yeah.
So the takeoff on X-Men became Ek-Men.
Mm-hmm.
So both those satires are in the current issue.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the Towering Stern. But you know what? I'll tell you some funny titles I didn't write. One of my favorites was Butch Casualty and Some Dunce Kid. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
A title I did write that worked out great was a takeoff on, I don't know if you remember this TV show, Voyage to the Bottom of the
Sea. Oh,
sure.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I worked out a great title, Voyage to See What's on the Bottom. So it looks just like their title, and then when you read it, go, wait a minute. But it still makes sense.
Yeah.
Voyage to See What's on the Bottom.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, you know, I've talked to you before about this. I mean, you know, as a kid, Mad was everything. I mean, I read Mad magazine constantly, and I had all the paperbacks and all that stuff, like the Al Jaffe stuff as well. And it was just a big, huge part of my childhood, and I'll never forget it. And in addition to that, Dick, you also wrote for Match Game, the classic Match Game, and like you created Dumb Dora. And some of the other classic characters.
Yeah, Weird Willie, and that was an outgrowth from Mad. You know, the original Match Game was name a red flower, name something you do with an egg, name something you serve on a roll, and it was a year contract. And 10 months in, Goodson called me in and said, "Mark Goodson, Goodson's Auburn Productions, said,
yeah,
listen, the show just got canceled." He said, "I'm just giving you a heads up. If you want to start looking around," he said, "you have 2 months of shows, but that's going to be the end of it." And then so over the weekend I thought about it, and on Monday I said, "Hey, Mark, you know, I work for Mad." He said, "Oh, yeah, I know." And I said, "So I'm thinking, instead of Name a Red Flower, how about John, Mary Liked to Pour Gravy on John's Blank?" And he said, "Oh," he laughed, and he said, "Well, what will they say?" I said, "Well, they'll laugh, and then they'll say meatloaf potatoes."
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, it's canceled. They can't cancel it twice. Do what you want."
Right.
And it kept going on and on and on and kept getting renewed. So
yeah, no, so, I still watch it. I watch it every morning, Dick. When I get home, right. I watch it every morning. And
Buzzer.
Buzzer and you know, the Game Show Network shows it as well.
Game Show Network, yeah.
Yeah, and I love the classic. I love it. You know, all the great celebrities that were on it, obviously the three regulars with Brett and Charles and Richard, they were
Richard,
classic.
Yeah.
But some of the other semi-regulars, you know, you Betty White and Fanny Flagg and Marsha Wallace.
Yes.
Just great stuff and really, really funny. And it still holds up. I watch that show now. It still holds up. And I think it's great.
Yeah. No, and Rayburn was super. Oh. I just love Rayburn.
Yeah. Gene Rayburn, great. Just one of the best game show hosts of all time. And he had so much fun doing it, you know, and it got crazier and crazier with each year, you know. It just
yes.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, when Rayburn would try and do jokes the first year, Goodson would have a fit, and Rayburn would call me and say, "Oh, so Goodson called me in again with his speech. This is a game show, not a comedy show.
Yeah.
Just stick to." But then when we started with the weird questions and the double entendres, then Goodson just saw the way it was going.
Yeah.
And since the ratings were up there, he didn't care what Gene did.
Right, right. And it was hugely popular back in the 70s. I mean, I remember rushing home from school to watch it every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And then CBS had this bizarre idea, and they moved it from 4 o'clock to 11 a.m., and
right.
it died. Yeah. Because you're right, the kids coming home from school were the biggest audience.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, I mean, I watched it. I look forward to it every day. I would rush home from school to watch it every single day. and I just loved it. I especially now, when I look back at it, you know, when I'm watching the reruns and the classic stuff on Buzzer and the Game Show Network, the byplay between Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Reilly is just priceless. They were just so funny and wonderful together, you know?
Yes, yes. That they didn't get on each other's nerves, but the way Charles Nelson Reilly, I think, I don't think he called her Brett once during the entire. He would just say, Elaine, what do you have for your answer? He would just. It was just fun. I just loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was just, you know, the first time I had you on the show, Dick, I was just so excited because Match Game and Mad Magazine were huge parts of my childhood, and you were a major component in that.
Well, thank you. And you know who I spoke to last week? Al Jaffe.
Oh, yeah. How's he doing? He's like, how old is he now?
Al Jaffe retired with the issue that's just going off sale now, the All Al Jaffe issue.
Yeah.
He's 99.
99. That's amazing. Good for him. How's he doing?
He's doing okay.
Yeah.
He's doing okay. Yeah. No, I always end the conversation with, Jaff, you are my hero.
Yeah. God, that's amazing. 99 years old, and he did so many great things with Mad. I mean, just so funny.
Yes, stupid answers.
Yeah.
Snappy answers to stupid questions.
That
first book sold 1.5 million copies.
I bought one of them.
Yeah.
I'm one of them.
I stole one of them out of the stock room.
All right, Dick, we got to get to what people can check out. How can people see the gizmos that you do? We're going to talk about some.
So I have two websites. Gizmos.biz is where there are 5 new gadgets every week, actually 4 gadgets and 1 old gadget. And gizmos.tv is where you can see the runs 45 minutes to an hour every week, which I do with OMG Chad Johnson.
Yeah.
And that's a lighthearted show talking about gadgets, mostly kind of offbeat gadgets.
Right. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about it. You sent over a list of some of the gizmos and gadgets that we're going to talk about. Dick, hang on, okay?
Yep.
The great Dick DiBartolo is with us, wrote for Mad Magazine, wrote for Match Game, and he is the Giz Whiz. And we got some gizmos and gadgets to talk about, and we'll do that after the news. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 4 o'clock. Coming up after midnight, Kevin Powell is going to join us. He covers sports right here on WGN on the Rokon Show every weekday afternoon. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dick DiBartolo is my guest. He's the Giz Whiz, wrote for Mad Magazine and Match Game. And loves gadgets and loves gizmos. And if you have a question or a comment, 312-981-7200. Hi, Dick.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's talk about some of the gadgets and gizmos that you've been playing around with and reviewing. The Yinkai Cyber Celebrity Collapsing Stool. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, this thing is really neat.
Okay.
So, if you're an older person, you'll remember the Kodak Carousel slide trays. It was a round plastic tray. So this is a round plastic canister. It's about 10 inches across and maybe 3 inches thick. And it has a shoulder strap and a handle. But each side of this canister has a hole. So you put your fingers in each side and you pull on it. It's almost like an accordion. It expands, and when it's fully open, you twist one side or the other, which locks it, and you now have an 18-inch high stool to sit on.
Wow.
So this is, and it weighs, I put it on my little postage scale, I think it was 2 pounds, 11 ounces. So these days, with lines everywhere and staying 6 feet apart, this is wonderful. You're an older person and you know it's going to be 40 minutes before you get inside a store or the post office. This is an easy way to carry this and have a stool. And if you have kids, you unlock it, drop it down to the height you want, and then twist it back again to relock it. And now you have a different height stool. Mm-hmm. And it's I paid $25 for mine. I think it's really great.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it on the Gizwiz website, and it looks really cool.
Yeah, there's on the website you can see what it looks like folded up and then with it extended.
Yeah.
And at first when I sat on it, I held onto my desk because I thought, is this going to be wobbly? But it wasn't. It feels really solid. The company says a 300-pound weight limit. One company says 1,000 pounds. I wouldn't buy it from that company because that's just ridiculous. But I think, a worthwhile gadget.
Okay. And people can get it online?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to my website, and there's a link to where I bought mine. And at the bottom of the, if you don't like the one I bought, just go to the bottom of that Amazon page, and there are lots of other choices. A lot of companies making it in different colors too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. That's a really nice gadget. I know you gave it a very high review.
Yeah, we've done a lot of crap on our show, but this one worked well.
And that's the Yinkai Cyber Celebrity Collapsing Stool, and it collapses down, and you can just, boom, you can use it to sit.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Sounds great. How long has the Gizwiz been going on? How long have you been doing that?
Boy, I've been the Gizwiz for, I think, coming up to almost 30 years. And Gizwiz is short for Gizmo Wizard, because when I first started, I was like the Gizmo guy. And then it turned out that there were like 19 Gizmo guys. And then I finally started studying about trademarks. And so you cannot copyright Gizmo guy,
yeah,
because it's two everyday words.
Yeah.
So I thought, Gizmo Wizard, so I went to a patent office or whatever those attorneys are called, and they said, yes, that can be copyrighted. And I said, also copyright Gizwiz, which is a shortened version of Gizmo Wizard. So that's how I became the Gizwiz.
Well,
and coming up to 30 years.
Yeah, well, you've been doing my show for over 20.
Oh, have I? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think the first time you're on my show was 1999, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's been, I think it's just been, it's been just over 20 years that you've been a regular guest on the show. Isn't that crazy?
It's astounding. My podcast in February, next February, my podcast, I'm in year 15.
Wow.
Yes.
Boy, time is just flying by, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I started it with Leo Laporte, who is got a huge tech following. And we did it on the phone, and he was up in his bedroom or something. And then he started a studio, Twit, This Week in Tech, using like 30 cameras. And then it turned into a video podcast. And then he spun it off, and now this guy, OMG Ted, and I just produce it on our own.
Yeah.
But yeah, time is just mad. It's coming up. I'm up to year 52
with Mad Magazine. That's insane. Yeah. That's really insane.
Yeah.
So great. All right, let's talk here about this Yosu portable solar cap fan.
This Chad bought this. Chad does one. Chad picks a theme of the month. Actually, our Patreon members pick a theme, and this month it was solar gadget. So he picked this solarific solar cooling hat, and it has a solar panel on the top of the baseball cap, and then a little fan on the front that you aim through a hole in the cap. And Chad said it works really bad. He couldn't get it to face down enough to cool him off. So it sort of shoots a little bit of a breeze at your forehead. So he thought that was terrible. And then I was searching online, and I said, wait a minute, look at this gadget. It's a gadget to turn any baseball cap into a solar cap. And I thought, oh, I can use this on with my Mad Hat. So I bought one. Look great in the picture. So the solar panel faces up and the fan faces down, which is great. So I slide it on my Mad Cap, and then I realize if you face the fan down far enough to cool you off, it hits the brim of the hat and cannot turn.
Oh, boy.
So it is really worse than Chad's. Chad gets a bit of a breeze. Mine, I think it was $12. I didn't even bother returning it. I just keep it on my desk as a joke as to how can someone design something so stupid. So those are two things you don't want to run out.
You don't
buy.
Want those. You don't want the portable solar cap fan. And,
right.
Or the exactly. solar cap fan attachment.
Exactly.
Not good.
Exactly.
Not good gadgets. Not good. Okay. All right, Dick, hang on. There you go. Dick DiBartolo is with us. Mad's Maddest Rider wrote for Match Game, and he's the GizWiz. You can check out gizwiz.biz for more information. Bunch of videos and a bunch of reviews of gadgets and gizmos, and we've got more gadgets and gizmos to talk about with Dick. And if you want to jump in here, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio on WGN. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock, as we are every weekday night morning from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. Coming up, Kevin Powell's going to join us after midnight. He does sports for the Rokan Show right here on WGN. We're going to talk some sports stories with him. We play back some classic Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV. And we're going to hear some stand-up from the really funny George Wallace. So that and more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you. My guest right now is Dick DiBartolo. He's the GizWiz, Mad's Maddest Rider, wrote for Match Game. Check out gizwiz.biz, and he's reviewing some gadgets and gizmos for us, which he does on a regular basis. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
All right. Let's get back to some of these gadgets here. What's the Bachmann Egg Liner?
The Egg Liner, I'm a big model railroad fan.
Yeah, that's right. You have it like in your yard, right? You have a...
In my yard, exactly. It's called G-Scale or Garden Scale. And if you go to like the botanical gardens or places that have trains that are outdoors, they're mostly... G-scale. Mm-hmm. And so Bachmann has something called an egg liner, and I believe they bought the rights to it from a company. It's called Aristocraft. I think they went out of business. And the story is someone at the factory took the two ends of a passenger car and bolted them together. So you had a mini, mini train that was basically the end of two passenger cars.
Mm.
And the object of this is it can run on a very small track. You know, G-scale trains normally are large and you need a fair amount of track. And so what Bachmann did is instead of taking two ends of a passenger car, they made a molded car that looks like the original, and I call it an egg liner because from overhead it looks like the shape of an egg.
Yeah,
and it runs around on a very small track, and they upgraded it to LED lighting, and it at night it glows. The LEDs from the roof and the sides glow inside the car, so it looks like it's illuminated inside. It's really great fun. if you're a G-Scale fan,
yeah,
and you want something really small. It's called the Eggliner, and the company is Bachmann.
I'm looking at their website, at Bachmann Trains. Do they do? Do you have a lot of Bachmann trains? Are they a really popular company?
You know what? I have a few things from Bachmann, but most of my trains are from a company called LGB, and it started. I think my trains have been out there for probably 15 or 20 years. And someone wrote me an email and said, what is this with trains that you can leave outdoors? And so I did a little research and saw that, like the botanical gardens and stuff, everything was from LGB. And I called the company and said, you know, I'm doing this. I was on a show, Steals and Deals, for CNBC. Mm-hmm. I said, could you send us like a train and some track, and can I leave it in my backyard like for 6 months and then have a camera crew come in and we'll turn them on and they'll run? And he said, yeah, we'll do that.
Uh-huh.
And they did. And so the day we shot the video, it was nice out. So we got buckets of water, and as the trains are running, we threw water on them. And anyway, that ran on CNBC. I called a guy and sent him a link, and he said, oh, this is so great. I said, I love this train. I hate to send it back. He said, God, we don't want it. I said, okay, because I'm using it in my backyard. And he said, how big is your yard? And I said, well, it's 18 feet by 30 feet. And he said, oh, I'll send you track. You can run it all around your yard. So he did, and they have been out there all these years.
Yeah.
I try to take them in the winter, but sometimes they've been frozen in ice and they still run.
That's amazing. Yeah. That really is amazing. Wow. Hey, we have somebody on the line here. Here's Laura. Laura, go ahead.
Hi. From one animal lover to another, happy dog day.
Yes.
I just sent you a quote. You'll get it when you read your online stuff. But I am an animal lover, and I love squirrels and birds and rabbits. And in the winter in Chicago, it gets very, very cold. So I would like to find a way, instead of having to change the water like 10 times a day, to keep the water unfrozen. Any ideas when I don't have
access to yes. You know, check Amazon first, if not just Google it. I've not looked for it recently, but in the past we've done the dog bowl water heater.
Okay.
Oh, wait, do you have access to AC power?
No.
Oh, you're looking.
I would really have to string up a long extension cord.
Okay. You know, I don't know of a way to keep water warm without a heat source.
Well, you know what? I'll check behind the bushes. I'm moving to a different apartment in the complex, and I'll have my own private entrance, so maybe I'll look behind the bushes that are right there, and there might be a cord that's out there for the grass cutters or something.
And what was the product again, Dick?
I don't remember the name, but if you just Google doggy water bowl heater, mm-hmm, or pet, okay, water bowl heater,
it'll work. Okay, thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Take care.
Oh, you're welcome.
All
you're
right.
Good luck. Okay.
Hey,
there's a good chance that there's an AC outlet for lighting and stuff that she might be able to use.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea. Okay, let's talk about the next one. Wacky Packages Minis. Now, is this connected to the Wacky Packages of my youth that I used to buy all the time?
Yes.
Okay.
What they've done, they've come out with Wacky Packages Minis 3D. Now, I did not know about Wacky Packages until this was one of the events I saw at the Sweet Sweet event. And when you bought them, were they just flat?
They were like trading cards and stickers.
Yes, exactly.
That's exactly okay. I had a ton of them. I had the stickers everywhere.
Okay. Well, now they're making mini boxes that look like the real thing. Like this, I got a couple of boxes here. Cracked Jerk. And it looks exactly like the Cracker Jack box.
Right, right.
And it's sort of like if you took a domino and wrapped the Cracker Jack label on it, that's about the size of it.
Oh, okay.
And then there's Milk Drone, which is looks exactly like the Milk Bone. Now, the thing is, I don't know if they get – I don't know how they do this because some of them are – the companies – would not like it because the Ritz Crackers is called Rats Crackers,
yeah.
And it looks exactly like the Ritz box,
right,
with the Ritz Crackers all around the Ritz, the blue Ritz, but on the top of it is a rat eating a Ritz. So I don't know quite how.
Yeah. I think that most companies have a good sense of humor about it. I mean, the wacky packages have been around for years and years, and my friends and I, we collected all of them. We had the stickers everywhere.
And, okay.
Yeah, okay. I mean, they were incredibly popular in the 70s. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, some of them are funny, you know, like Skimpy Peanut Butter instead of Skippy.
Right.
It's almost like a Mad Magazine.
It is.
Thing.
That's exactly what it's like. One more before we let you go here. You got a few more here. You were talking about the Kids Tracks trucks. Tell me about that.
Oh, these are coming out. One of them is coming out at the end of this month. So Ride On makes these Ride On toys for kids, and they have two new ones coming out. One is the semi-truck. So the semi-truck has a removable trailer, and the trailer itself can carry like a 50-pound load. And the kid rides in the cab. It's a single ride-on. And the cab is a six-wheel semi-truck. And it has a CB radio. And it has 100 different sounds of motors running. And it's a 12-volt system. It's for ages 3 to 5. Top speed is 4 miles an hour. It has rubber traction tires. And the company says, I spoke to the guy there, and he said, you know, this is for sidewalks, driveways, things like that.
Yeah.
He even sent me a video of it running on grass. But they are so realistic looking. Kids will love them.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture. I'm looking at a picture of them now. Man, I would go nuts over this if I were a kid.
Oh, my. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's pre-orderable on Walmart. The big semi truck, which is a two-piece thing, I think it's $249. And then the other thing they make that has already been nominated as a toy of the year, even though it isn't, it's coming out, I think, in September, is the recycling truck.
That's cool.
It's great. And in the back, it comes with a lot of rubbish that, with different slots, you throw stuff in.
Oh, that's really cool. And it teaches kids, too. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And the bumper is his mouth, and the truck talks.
Wow.
I mean, when we were kids, we would kill for
them. Oh, are you kidding? I want it now, and I'm 55.
So I know. I said if the show was in person, I would try to ride that.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Well, Dick, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You're one of my favorite guests of all time.
Well, thank you.
Dick DiBartolo, he's the GizWiz. Check out gizwiz.biz for all your gadgets and gizmo needs. Dick, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. I'll send good thoughts toward your dad.
Oh, thank you, Dick. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Okay.
Okay, buddy.
Go. See ya. Dick DiBartolo. I was nervous the first time I ever had Dick on. Wrote for Mad Magazine and Match Game. Those were huge things from my childhood. Okay. Kevin Powell. You know Kevin. He does sports right here on WGN on the Rokan Show every weekday afternoon. He's going to join us right here to talk sports after we take a trip to the newsroom.
My friends feel it's their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me
All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 4 o'clock. It is a Thursday morning, and we always play back some classic Johnny Carson clips. The very funny George Wallace. We'll play some stand-up from George Wallace coming up. We're also going to talk about some really stupid schemes that actually made people money. There was a pistachio scheme as well that we're going to jump around. And we'll talk a little bit about this right now, but we're going to talk about today in history was the first televised baseball game. Was the first televised baseball game. And we're going to talk about your first games and if you remember them. So there you go. But right now, we would like to welcome to the show our good friend Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell, you can listen to him weekday afternoons on the Rokan Show, covering the world of sports. And he joins us usually about once a month to catch up on some sports with us. So let us say hello to Kevin Powell. Kevin, how are you, man?
I'm good, Nick. It's felt like forever since I last talked to you. Appreciate you having me, as always.
No, it's always a pleasure, man. Always. Been keeping busy?
Yeah, actually, kind of, because, you know, back 3, 4, 5 months ago when the sports world shut down, we kind of were looking ahead, and sports leagues and teams and everything were starting to lay out plans for what they were going to try to do it in 2020, and we're in the second half of the year now, and things are picking up. I mean, we got the NHL, we got MLB, we got the NBA, football. So, yeah, it's been there's been a whole lot of sports stuff actually going on.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the NHL. I was very sad. The fact that the Hawks actually got into the playoffs because of the new setup was amazing, because it didn't look like they would back in March.
Yeah, I think the percentage for them to get in back in March when everything shut down, I think it was in the single digits.
Yeah.
So for them to get in was awesome. And look, there's been moments where I've been watching live sports where I've always felt like I've had to, how would I say it? I don't know, manufacture that sort of typical sports excitement I may have had pre-pandemic. I mean, there have been moments where I'm like, yeah, this feels almost, maybe in the beginning a little bit more, but watching those playoff games for the Hawks, it felt real. It felt like Blackhawks playoff hockey for a little bit.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. The Edmonton series, and, you know, I thought they fought.
The Edmonton series was great. I mean, you know, and I was just so happy. But I mean, you know, look at, man, Vegas is a great team. They're just a great team, and they've got the Hawks number. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Well, watching Vegas play, it gives you an idea of, I mean, even after that series, Patrick Kane was talking about how they, you know, moving forward, what does this team need to do outside of some of these younger players developing the style of play and the way Vegas plays? It's extremely aggressive. They, you know, it's line after line after line with Vegas, with big guys who can skate, and they get to the net and they push hard. They're not afraid to be overly aggressive, and even Patrick Kane acknowledged that. So, but you know, I thought that was a big moment, that just even being in there, and then a lot of those guys, you know, people keep thinking the Blackhawks are this old aging team, and that's because we're thinking of the core four or five guys. But heading into the postseason, if you looked at average age per team, the Blackhawks actually had the youngest team, believe it or not. So,
yeah.
You know, the core is there, but still very young.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, man, Vegas, they're just big and fast. That's
I know. And I thought the Hawks fought hard. I really did. You know, there was some impressive play, but I'm watching Vegas. I'm like, nobody's beating these guys.
No, I mean, they're unbelievable. I mean, that's the deal. Well, speaking of the Blackhawks, let's get to the Corey Crawford story. He says that he would take a little less money to stay with the Hawks. He wants to stay with the Blackhawks. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, we've heard that too from, you know, the guys like Taze and Kane following the game, and Duncan Keith, that they keep talking about that one more championship.
But hey, by the way, doesn't Duncan Keith look like a lunatic with the hair and the beard? Yeah, he looks like a maniac. I love it.
He's always been a little nuts, you know.
Yeah.
That style of play. I mean, the guy just is throwing his body around, getting teeth knocked out, doesn't care. Just your prototypical NHL hockey player.
Yeah, I love the guy.
And he's still playing at a high level. I mean, the guy, he still looks like intimidating Duncan Keith, like he's in good shape and everything and all that. So,
so back to Corey Crawford.
Okay, so yeah, his contract among the core players, it's up. It expires after this year. So what do they do? Is Corey Crawford willing to take a few extra less bucks? How badly does he want to stick with the core of Taves, Kane, Seabrook, Keith, and give it one more go?
Yeah.
Keith, Taves, Seabrook, and Kane, they're locked up for another few years, so they're not going anywhere. Does Corey Crawford, or is there a team out there that's willing to give him a whole boatload of cash that he can't say no to? I mean, he was still really, really good. I mean, there was he was a big reason why they even made it four games
against
Vegas. Oh, yeah,
absolutely. I mean, he was on his head, man. He was amazing.
He was unbelievable. I mean, he showed everybody why he is who he is, and still, when he's on, one of the best goalies in the NHL, at least I think that, you know, watching him play. I mean, the way he's stolen games for the Hawks over, he's been within the organization for about 13 years now. So, I really hope they can find a way to bring him back. It's just going to come down, and with the hard salary cap next year, and there's a lot of things the Hawks have to sort out when it comes to money. That Seabrook deal, look, we're all huge fans of Brent Seabrook. It's not a good deal for the Blackhawks. He has a lot of money remaining. He's been hurt. Hopefully he can get back to 100% after, three surgeries this offseason? A couple hip and a shoulder. So it's just going to come down to money with Corey Crawford. I personally obviously hope they can find a way to bring him back. I still think he can play an extremely high level.
I agree. I hope they bring him back. I think he's great, you know, and I know that he was out for a while and, he was injury prone and he had the COVID scare and all that stuff. But,
yeah, well, and give him credit too. I mean, the guy came into the playoffs off short. How would I put it? He didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare. He had COVID, you know? I mean, for him to come into the playoffs and perform like that, like, let's not completely dismiss what the guy had to go through, you know, for a lot of different reasons. So it was impressive stuff from Crawford, and I hope they find a way to bring him back. But it's going to take some salary cap maneuvering.
It's not only that, but, I mean, you know, I know the salary cap is obviously the top thing here. We'll talk more about it as we proceed. We'll see what happens. Kevin, hang on, okay?
All right, you got it.
All right. Kevin Powell's with us. You can hear him do cover sports on the Rokan Show every weekday afternoon right here on WGN. And we'll talk more with Kevin about sports right here coming up. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio, here until 4 o'clock on a Thursday morning. My guest is Kevin Powell. You can listen to him cover sports on the Rokan Show every weekday afternoon, and he joins us usually about once a month, catch up on the world of sports. Hey, Kevin.
Always love being on with you, Nick. I appreciate it. Thank you, my friend.
Always love having you on, buddy. So, you know, the Kenosha police shooting has affected everything, everyone, everywhere, and now it has affected sports as well because the NBA, the WNBA, MLB, and the MLS games were called off as players boycotted in response to the police shooting. This is kind of unprecedented. What's your take on this?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a historic day in sports history. I mean, you could even, I think, go as far as just say, you know, American history. Like, you had pro athletes bailing because they're tired. And I don't know if you want to go down the road of how I feel about all of that. But, you know, it's, I'll say this. I mean, there is basically a moment at least once a day, probably for you, for me, for everybody listening, where it just feels surreal, right? Yeah. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic here, and sports were shut down March 12th. As I'm doing reports in the afternoon, I'm having flashbacks to March 12th when all of a sudden, the entire afternoon, the only thing I'm doing is talking about March Madness getting canceled, about leagues being postponed, about spring training shutting down, essentially the entire sports world shutting down. And here we are with a pandemic. Unbelievably, somehow these leagues have been able to pull off something resembling a normal season. I don't even want to use normal because it's not, but you know what I mean. The fact that they're even playing games, I mean, the NHL with the bubble, the NBA, Major League, all of them, the fact that they're even doing it is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, these players are so frustrated and fed up that during all of that, they're still willing to walk away from the game. I think that says a lot, where the fact that they've pulled this off and these guys are still saying no, you know, that's still secondary to us. And so I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. They're millionaire professional athletes. But the angle, the way I'm going with this is it just shows you that these players are completely fed up, and I think they're feeding off the energy, and they feel where some are in America with a lot of things. I mean, it's surreal in some ways. I mean, more power to them. I think for me, as much as people were talking about how powerful it was just simply for them to say, no, I'm not playing because I either want to make a stand or just simply take the night to have conversations about things that matter. Watching the Milwaukee Bucks set the tone, the Wisconsin team, right?
Yeah.
With the shooting in Kenosha. And then ESPN was reporting that while the Bucks were in their locker room, they weren't just sitting there. They were actually on a phone call with head government officials in Kenosha. Like they were on the phone asking for change, asking for difference. They were actually trying to do something. So I think it's very easy for a lot of people to roll eyes at certain symbols or Twitter hashtags or people posting things on Instagram or rolling eyes at a player kneeling or doing this or doing that. If you want any more evidence that they care, there were professional athletes who were on a phone call with government officials trying to make real change happen.
Yeah.
To me, that's what stood out the most of the entire day, was that they actually were doing something about it other than, you know, however you want to view it, whether it was just the protesting on and off courts or fields or whatever it may be, they were doing something about it. They were on a phone call asking for change, demanding change. I think that says a lot.
Yeah. I agree. And it's, people are making a stand, and I think that's important. And also, Jason Hayward opted out last night and was not in the lineup for the Cubs.
Yeah. And you know, it's, I should have led with that too. I mean, for him, you know, it's just a lot, Nick, and I know a lot of people have a lot of opinions on it, so I don't know where exactly I want to go with this. But I just thought it was a very moving and powerful day in the sports world, and I think that they definitely got, you know, I think I have a lot to say, Nick. I apologize. I think people are very sensitive about a lot of things right now, and I don't mean to be overly political or anything, but for me it was powerful to see them actually doing stuff like calling government officials and demanding change.
Yeah.
You know, that you could actually see real change rather than just sort of demonstrating or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's you know, it's an unprecedented time. We've never dealt with this kind of thing before, and I think it's interesting how the world of sports and particular athletes are dealing with it. So we'll keep an eye on what's happening, and it's always newsworthy.
My last point, you know, like 4 years ago was the day, on the same day where players were boycotting, was the day Colin Kaepernick was sitting during the national anthem.
Right.
You know, it's like 4 years to the day, and here we are kind of doing it all over again, you know?
Yeah. All right. Okay, well, we'll cover the world of what's going on in the world with sports. There you go. All right, Kevin, let's go to, yesterday, the 26th of August, marked the anniversary of the very first televised Major League Baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in 1939. Can you imagine what that broadcast was like?
Couple of cameras that really just stationary cameras trying to get any sort of feed.
Yeah.
You know, it's just crazy, like the way TV productions are now. I mean, we get everything you could possibly want within a broadcast, between just all the technology and graphics and everything you could think of. You know, it's crazy to think that people were consuming games so much differently back then to where we are now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because we obviously, you know, there are now 24-hour sports channels, And, you know, I mean, and the way that the games are covered now with the technology and all of the little effects and everything is amazing. But you go back and look at some of the earlier days, even if you go back to like the 70s and watch like some of the old footage of the Cubs broadcast back when Brickhouse was doing the call. It looks so primitive back then. You know what I mean? Even in the 70s, you watch it. Because if you watch... Like you watch like the footage of Ernie Banks' 500th home run, and the you know and the weird the very primitive graphics on the bottom of the screen and everything. It's just so crazy.
The hey hey popping up on the screen. It's
exactly.
Just like your typical text bug.
Yeah.
You know it's I'm a golf junkie. I know some can't even think imagine watching golf on TV, but like I watch. I'll see old golf highlights that they'll pull up during a broadcast of like Jack Nicklaus playing, at the Masters in the 70s. And I'm like, how do they watch it? You can barely see the ball. Now you have like a tracer behind every golf ball. They have a million cameras. I'm like, you can actually navigate it. Before, I'm like, what could you even see that? And you could see the figure of the golfer, and that's about it.
That was the that's the thing. It's that all this technology that we use to cover the world of sports now, really makes it more exciting and more accessible. Especially especially a sport like golf, which is not really conducive to television excitement. You know what I mean. But they make it they make it interesting to watch.
They do. They do. And I mean, we think about all the. You can basically find a way to get anything. That's even remotely organized and competitive somehow either on your TV or your laptop these days. I mean, really anything. You can watch horse racing almost 24/7. You got Australian horse racing, all kinds of stuff. There's almost always something on. We are kind of spoiled with just when it comes to that, I guess.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true. It's amazing, how much sports we have access to. On our television.
And think about hockey back in the day. That's such a fast game. It's at times it can be almost difficult to follow along with what is happening. I mean, now it's easier with HD and things like that. But imagine trying to watch a hockey game from the 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
And how difficult that would have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was that period of time when you couldn't watch the Hawks. Like they didn't broadcast the Hawks. Father, the Rocky Wirtz's dad. Decided that, I mean, I remember there was a quote that he had, which was, there are only 18,000 Hawks fans in Chicago and they all just go to the stadium. And I was like, what?
And it made no sense.
No, it made no sense whatsoever. And the fact that we couldn't watch Hawks games, well, I mean, as me being a lifelong Hawks fan, I was like, it was so aggravating. And then, when that was all fixed and now you can watch the Hawks anytime you want, you can watch hockey, all over the place. It's much better it's much better for the fans of the sport.
I remember as a kid having this very early interest in the Blackhawks. I remember having like Blackhawks shirts and hats. I think I went to one game and I was hooked. And then the next thing I know, I'm like, I can remember someone telling me that as a kid, some of these games aren't on TV, and just be like, and it was never on TV.
Yeah.
So then you lose like a whole generation, because as a kid, I initially had this hunger to watch Blackhawks, and then it was like, well, where'd they go? They're gone. I don't even know where this team is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was a very frustrating time. Okay, Kev, hang out, okay?
All right.
We got to talk. When we get back, we're going to talk White Sox. So big week for the White Sox, I'll tell you, man.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so yep. Kevin Powell is here. He covers sports here on WGN for the Rokan Show every weekday afternoon. We'll talk more sports with him coming up. Hello, Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock, that Thursday morning. Coming up, we're going to talk about an elaborate pistachio scheme and then some other dumb schemes that actually made people money. We're going to talk about how crazy ways that people have saved their lives And we were just talking about this, that the first televised baseball game happened yesterday. So we're going to talk our memories about our first games and stuff like that. 312-981-7200 is our phone number if you would like to join us. Our good friend Kevin Powell joins us usually about once a month. You can hear him every weekday afternoon here on WGN on the Rokan Show, covering the world of sports. And we talk sports with Kevin every month. Hey, Kev.
I've had so much fun watching the White Sox over the past 10 days or so, Nick. It's been a long time for this sort of fun and excitement with the White Sox organization, and it's finally arrived.
You know, they're on a roll, man, and it's awesome that we get to play the games or broadcast the games here on WGN. I mean, this looks like it's going to be a pretty special season. I mean, the future, I think, is really, really bright and really, really strong for the Sox right now. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, they've won 9 of 10 games. If you look in that stretch, there's been a game where they hit 4 consecutive home runs.
Yeah.
they really put their foot down at Wrigley and showed the Cubs that they can stick with them.
Yep.
And there's also been a no-hitter mixed in.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about
this. Missing even more than that. It's just been so many crazy
It's been crazy. They're on an unbelievable roll right now, the Sox are. I mean, seriously. And let's talk about a little bit about that no-hitter.
Yeah, it's just so cool to see Lucas Giolito, who's one of, you know, being lucky enough to cover the White Sox, having a chance to talk to him multiple times, and he's such a smart, self-aware guy, and you could tell he really works on his craft. And look, this is a guy back in 2018 had the worst ERA among American League starting pitchers. 2019, he becomes an all-star. 2020, he's here now. He's had back-to-back games where he struck out 13 batters, and oh, that's right, of course, a no-hitter. I mean, it's just been such a cool turnaround for him. And such a likable guy as well, who, when you talk to him, you can just tell he has his passion for baseball. And to see him celebrating with James McCann,
yeah,
a guy for over the past couple of years, he's talked about how much James McCann means to him. So to see them do that together was really cool. And I think, I don't mean to be overly emotional, Nick, but there is something when you see that during all of this, you just, again, surreal moments, right?
Yeah.
Empty ballpark. There was a power surge at the ballpark that shut down the power for a moment during the game. And, you know, Ricky Renteria after the game was emotional. He was tired. He's like, he wanted to cry. He was talking about Lucas. You know, they've been through a lot. And again, I feel like I have to preface this every time I talk about pro athletes. They are taken care of very nicely, and et cetera, and all of that. But like, it isn't easy for them. I mean, they're going through constant testing. Like, how many people have actually gone through it is difficult in a way for them. These are guys that are used to going about a certain routine. For them to go through this, it's challenging for everybody. So to pull that off in a season like this and to have the focus through it all, it's almost, you know, in some ways more impressive from Lucas Giolito. So it's I think there are a lot of Sox fans who just to watch a no-hitter in a time where it's just so much uneasiness in everywhere with everything going on, I think it was a really emotional night there, and just overall just so fun for Sox fans. And I think all of baseball, I mean, everybody was talking about it. You know, if you're on social media, if you're all the media outlets were talking about it, national and locally.
Yeah. Well, we were, you know, we had gotten here, you know, because we get to the station earlier, you know, pretty early before the show. We go on at 11. We usually get here around 9-ish, 9:30-ish. And the game was going, and I hadn't I didn't know what was going on, and we were walking into the newsroom, and they're like, hey, this is, you know, it's like inning 7, and there's a no-no going.
Yeah.
And I was like, what, really? Wow. And it was pretty cool, man, to hear that.
It was very cool. Andy Mazur had a great call with it, too.
Yeah.
You know, Jason Benetti did a phenomenal job. You know, here's some nuggets for you, Nick, when we just talk about the success the Sox have had over the past 10 games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've outscored their opponents 70-21.
Oh, my God.
The batters are hitting .311, 19 doubles, 32 home runs over that 10-game stretch.
Wow, that's amazing.
And starting pitcher is 11-5 with a 2.72 ERA. Basically, everything's working for the White Sox right now.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely, they are on a roll. There's just it's absolutely nuts. And they
seven game winning streak at home. That's their longest home winning streak in 8 years as well. So I can keep pulling up nuggets here for you, Nick.
Yeah.
Jose Abreu's on a 10-game hitting streak. He's batting .475 during that stretch with 9 home runs. You got to figure he's in the MVP conversation.
No
as well.
Question. So no question.
Just a few numbers to kind of paint the picture of what kind of success they're having. Right now.
Abreu was named Player of the Month, wasn't he?
Player of the week.
Player of the week. He should have been player of the year so far.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, Tim Anderson hit safely in 9 of his last 10 games, batting .357 in that stretch, 4 home runs. Eloy Jimenez is on a 7-game hitting streak, hitting .464 in that stretch. And they're getting production. I mean, even Danny Mendick, who, hit a home run, he's batting 8th or 9th regularly. So you're getting production from really top to bottom throughout the lineup. But I can't remember a stretch of, a week or even 2 weeks of White Sox baseball like this in a long, long time.
Yeah, it's just been it's been crazy. I mean, since the beginning of the season, they've been knocking it out of the park. Literally.
Literally, figuratively, yeah.
Exactly. So got that no-hitter, a few days ago. That was really exciting. I'm looking at this article from the Chicago Tribune. The White Sox pitchers have thrown 19 no-hitters since 1902.
I believe that's second most all time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I believe it's the Dodgers who have the most all time. But it's the most strikeouts for a pitcher from Lucas Giolito in a White Sox no-hitter. Back-to-back 13-game performances from Giolito. He's located in everything, and he's working, if we want to talk baseball, and wondering why. I mean, he's commanding it. He's throwing mid-90s, and his changeup sits in the low 80s, and he's locating basically everything. He even mixed in some sliders in the ninth inning during that no-hitter when basically all he had thrown was fastball and changeup. So he's a smart guy. He's a smart pitcher. There's a difference between being a thrower and a pitcher.
Yeah.
This guy obviously knows how to pitch. So it was just just an incredible performance from Lucas Giolito.
No question about it. He only allowed one base runner on a walk. It was very, very, very close to being a perfect game.
And when that last ball was hit to right, I thought for sure it was dropping.
Yeah.
Adam Engel just happened to be in perfect positioning, shifted over towards the line, and made a running grab. That was not an easy play. So drama at the end there. He pulled it off.
He did. And, the Sox are on a roll. I know White Sox fans are really happy. People who listen to WGN and our Sox fans, this is quite a season so far. And I'm looking back at the 19 no-hitters here, and the first one was September 20th, 1902. It was against the Tigers. Sox won 3-0, and it was Jimmy Nixie Callahan. And it was the very first no-no by an American League pitcher. So the Sox have that piece of history,
wow,
too. The very first no-no by an American League pitcher was on the Sox.
That's such an old-timey baseball name, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jimmy Nixie Callahan. Jimmy Nixie Callahan!
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Real quick, before we let you go, Wilson Contreras' improvement behind the plate has been great for Cubs pitchers, and they've finally acknowledged how great he's playing this season.
Yeah, I mean, even just a couple, 2-3 years ago, Wilson Contreras for a moment was in the MVP conversation in the National League, and then he pulled a hamstring at a game, I believe, in San Francisco. When he's playing his best, Wilson Contreras is top 2-3 catcher in all of baseball defensively.
Yep.
With a cannon for an arm and a big-time bat that's potent within the lineup. So, huge piece to it. And David Ross straight up said, he goes, we're going to go with the core. We know who the core is, right? Baez,
yep.
Rizzo. Brian's been banged up, though. Haven't seen a whole bunch of him.
Yeah.
The Contreras's, those type of guys. So, they got off such a strong start. They've hit a little bit of a slow patch here, but when you start 13-3, you kind of buy yourself a little bit of time if you do hit a little bit of a slump.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm a huge Cubs fan. I'm very excited about what's going to happen for the rest of the season. I really am. So, but we'll keep an eye on it. And Wilson Contreras is a big piece of that puzzle. No question about it.
Absolutely. I think the chances of both these teams playing the postseason looking really, really good. And that's fun for Chicago.
Exactly. Fun baseball season for the Chicago area and fans. Hey, Kev, always a great pleasure, buddy.
All right.
Take care, and we'll listen to you on the Rokan Show.
You're the best, Nick. Thank you so much.
Okay,
appreciate
man.
You having
All right.
me.
Kevin Powell, every weekday afternoon here on WGN, covering sports on the Rokan Show. And he joins us usually about once a month to cover sports here. All right, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.
Ain't no woman like the one I've got. Ain't no woman like the one I've got. Ain't no woman like the one I've got. Every day the sun comes.
Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio, here until 4 on this Thursday. It's a Thursday, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
My calculator says that, yeah.
Your calculator? What is this, 1975?
Yeah, well, it tells the date. Uh-huh. I can do all sorts of weird functions.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about some really dumb schemes that actually made people some money. We also have an elaborate pistachio scheme, which is going to need some explanation. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you'd like to join us. Every weekday morning at 2:30 right here on the show, we play back some classic Johnny Carson comedy. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV. And I suggest you do, because it's awesome. So we always play back some classic comedy, whether it be a sketch or an interview or some stand-up, and we'll hear some stand-up from the very, very funny George Wallace. Do we know about what time frame the George Wallace stand-up is from?
You know, I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. So George Wallace, very, very funny guy. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. That's the Team Hochberg phone line. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. So as I mentioned to Kevin. Oh, by the way, we have something going on with the podcasts that we wanted to mention.
Yeah, so there's just been a little bit of technical
a glitch.
Yeah, just a little glitch, and it's across every show. It's not just us, you know, just a little glitch on getting everybody the podcast. But you can get them still on the website every single day, every single second of every single show.
And the app.
And the app as well. So definitely download the WGN Radio app. You're going to get that same high-quality audio content.
So download the WGN Radio app and check out WGNRadio.com. To get the podcasts. And again, every second of this show, every second of every show turns into a podcast. And so if you miss any of it, get the podcast. You can listen at your leisure, bro. So Kevin Powell, again, who you can hear on the Rokan Show doing sports every weekday afternoon. I'd mentioned that the first televised Major League Baseball game was on August 26th, 1939. It was broadcast on station W2XBS. The station that was to become WNBC-TV. Announcer Red Barber called the game between the Cincinnati Reds and the Brooklyn Dodgers at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, New York. At the time, television was still in its infancy. Regular programming did not yet exist, and very few people owned television sets. There were only about 400 in the New York area. Not until 1946 did regular network broadcasting catch on in the United States, and only in the mid-50s did television sets become more common in the American household. In 1939, the World's Fair, which was being held in New York, became the catalyst for the historic broadcast. The television was one of the fair's prize exhibits. And organizers believed that the Dodgers-Reds doubleheader on August 26th was the perfect event to showcase America's grasp on this new technology. Wow. By today's standards, the video coverage was somewhat crude, you think? There were only two stationary camera angles. The first was placed down the third base line to pick up infield throws to first, and the second was placed high above home plate to get an extensive view of the field. It was also difficult to capture fast-moving plays. Swinging bats looked like paper fans, and the ball was all but invisible during pitches and hits. Wow. I wonder if there's any footage of that. That would be pretty cool to see. Nevertheless, the experiment was a success, driving interest in development of television technology, particularly for sporting events. Though baseball owners were initially concerned that televising baseball would sap actual attendance, they soon warmed to the idea. In particular, they embraced the possibilities for revenue generation that came with increased exposure of the game, including the sale of rights to air certain teams or games and television advertising. Today, televised sports is a multi-billion dollar industry with technology that gives viewers an astounding amount of visual and audio detail. Cameras are now so precise that they can capture the way a ball changes shape when struck by the bat, and athletes are wired to pick up field level and sideline conversation. Yeah, we've come a long way since two cameras. Just two stationary camera angles.
Now we're miking up players and catching their blithe conversations about God knows what.
You know who should be mic'd all the time?
Rizzo?
Yes.
Rizzo's hilarious.
He and Bryant, when they mic'd up Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, hilarious. Really, really funny stuff, especially Rizzo. I mean, because he was just like mocking people on the other. I can't remember who they were playing, but he was like making fun of the guys who were on, well, who had to stand next to him if they got a single or a walk. And there's Rizzo having some fun with the mic. So there it is. Yesterday marked the first televised Major League Baseball game, and it was in 1939. Cincinnati Reds versus the Brooklyn Dodgers. We've come a long way. So we're going to discuss some of the greatest moments in sports history, because that's a big moment. Your first televised Major League Baseball game, that's a really, really big moment in sports history. But what do you think are some of the greatest moments in sports history? 312-981-7200. That's our number. And that's what we're going to talk about here. I've got from the Bleacher Report, they put together what they think are the five greatest moments in sports history. And we'll talk about those, but we want to hear from you. What do you think are the best moments in sports history? 312-981-7200. Here's Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
How are you doing?
All right. What's up?
Good. I was talking to Tom or Dallas, however you want to go. And I know you had Kevin Powell on talking about your most memorable TV sports history, and it would be, for me, would be the 1977 Dodgers-Yankees World Series. It was Game 6 when Reggie Jackson hit the three home runs off of Bert Hooton, Charlie Huff, and Elias Sosa.
Yeah.
But during that game, I was 7 years old, but watching that World Series, I was sick with the mono.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Brian.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Brian had mono? He had a...
Yeah, sitting watching the game, probably delirious.
All right.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson, Mr. October. That was amazing. That's an amazing performance right there. Yeah, that's how he got the old nickname, Mr. October. That's where it came from, was that incredible performance. He was a great player. Reggie Jackson, a great ball player. What do you think? Some of the greatest moments in sports history. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. Here's Glenn on WGN. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, morning, Nick. Or hey. Evening, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Sports history, I'm not too sure about. There's so many of them. But my question is, going back to the first televised, is what was the first commercial?
I don't know.
Or would it have been one?
I don't know. My guess is that there probably weren't commercials. That would be my guess.
Yeah. It was probably for chewing tobacco.
Yeah.
So I was just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. So, do you know, Tom?
I do, actually. I do. It was for Bulova watches.
Bulova Watches.
Wow. Bulova.
Wow.
That was aired on July 1st, 1941, before the beginning of a baseball game in New York between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the Philadelphia Phillies.
So that was the first commercial that they showed?
Yeah, first ever advertisement. NBC's WNBT-TV. It was only 10 seconds long, and it featured no voiceover.
Ah, well, there it is. Well, that wasn't in the 1939 game, so there were no commercials in the 1939 game. The first commercial was aired in 1941.
Bulova
Watches. All right,
surprised
thanks, Glenn.
Me, have a nice morning.
All right. Bulova Watches. That seems a little weird. They didn't have beer back then? It's beer commercials are probably the most popular for televised sports, wouldn't you think?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Probably something like Bud Light. It's probably the most popular one.
Can you remember how popular? No, you don't. How popular the light beer commercials were? How popular the light beer commercials were?
Well,
less filling tastes great.
I remember a good amount of that.
Classic commercials.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to say best mascot for a light beer, Spuds McKenzie.
That wasn't light beer.
Wasn't it? I thought Spuds McKenzie was for Bud Light.
Oh, Bud Light, yeah. Not Miller Light. Because the Taste Great, less filling was Miller Light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long did they use the WhatsApp?
Budweiser?
That was Budweiser.
That was Budweiser, okay.
I want to say like a year in 1999.
Because you had that and the Frogs were also Budweiser.
Yeah, Budweiser Frogs.
Yeah.
Classics.
And I loved both those commercials. I thought the What's Up commercials were hilarious.
Amazing.
I thought they were absolutely hilarious. But everybody was going, everybody. So, yeah, I remember seeing those commercials for the first time, the Frogs and the screaming What's Up guys. All right. Phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Bleacher Report put together what they think are the five greatest sports moments in history, but we want to hear from you. What are your favorite moments? What do you think are the greatest moments in sports history? 312-981-7200, and we'll get back to that after the news. Hello, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude here until 4 o'clock. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are going to talk about really dumb schemes where people actually did make some money and more. Classic Johnny Carson clip we always play at 2:30. We'll be playing some stand-up from George Wallace, which is always very cool. Well, as we talked, yesterday was the anniversary of the first television broadcast of a baseball game, and that was a big moment in sports history. So we're talking about some of the greatest moments in sports history. And what do you think? 312-981-7200. Call us up. Phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Greatest moments in sports history. That's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. Here's James on WGN. Hey, James.
Hey, how are you? Hope your fire feels better.
Thank you.
Okay, one moment Hank Aaron's home run off Al Downing, made for 7:15.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Yankees Iron Man Lou Gehrig's speech about being the luckiest man in the world.
Right. Yep. That is a classic moment in sports history. No question about it. All right, James. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
312-981-7200. Yeah, I remember. I remember where I was when I saw Hank Aaron hit that 7:15. I was at a neighbor's house in the house that I lived in. There was an apartment building in the backyard, so there were two buildings on the on the property. We were in the front, right out on Addison, and then there was a
I think it was a 3-flat in the back apartment building. That was the back apartment building. We were visiting. We knew the people. Well, we knew pretty much everybody in the building, but the people on the second floor were really good friends with my parents. And that was the same day, because we were like house sitting for them. My mom was there and my dad, and we were kind of house sitting for them while they were away, because that's the day that they had their daughter. They had their daughter on the same day that Hank Aaron broke the record. So yeah, it was pretty spectacular to watch. It was pretty cool. So I would say that, and of course this article does mention that. You can't have an article with the greatest moments in sports history and not have the Hank Aaron home run. So 312-981-7200. What do you think? What are some of your favorite or the greatest moments in sports history? Sports are great, says this author of this article. Millions upon millions of people every year across not only the United States but the entire world involve themselves with sports one way or another. Whether it be coaching a team, playing for a team, whatever the case may be, it's safe to say that without sports, the world we live in today would be a much, much different from the world that we currently know. There are dozens of different sports in the world, ranging from baseball to skiing, football to cricket, basketball to croquet. There are also dozens of different reasons that people involve themselves with sports, no matter the level. One of the most common reasons as to see why people love sports is because the way that sports can lift us to the way that they can make us feel on top of the world and invincible, albeit sometimes only for a moment. That's a good summation of it. Ever since sports were first played, there have been millions of special and iconic moments. To narrow down the 5 greatest moments in sports history, it was no easy task. However, the 5 moments that I chose, and this was the author, are on this list for different reasons. To be considered one of the greatest moments in sports history, the moment had to be special. It has to be a moment where people remembered where they were when it happened or when they heard the news. It had to have uplifted a large group of people, and it must be an iconic moment in time that will stand forever. That makes sense. So we got 5 of them here that the author picked here at Bleacher Report. There are definitely more than 5 great moments in sports. So 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Howdy.
Hi.
Obviously, this was way before our time, but the catch of the time, that has to be one of the
yeah
best plays.
Well, if people if people don't know what that is, explain what the catch is.
Willie Mays caught that over his shoulder, diving back towards the center field wall.
Yeah,
I mean, of the time, that was one of the best plays, and of course, we saw Jim Edmonds do it too. But he, of course, didn't invent it. And since I'm calling from Kalamazoo, Michigan, right across the pond, I thought I'd throw 2 Derek Jeter moments in there, Mr. November, and then the flip at home plate in the World Series, or the American League Championship Series.
Yeah. Yeah, Derek Jeter. Yep. All right. Okay. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Yep. Have a good evening.
All right. Up in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Up there in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Okay, phone lines are open. What do you think are some of the greatest moments in sports history? And we'll find out what the author of this article in Bleacher Report thinks. But yeah, what are they? Any sport. 312-981-7200. Okay, it's Nick DiDilio on WGN. Get back to the greatest moments in sports next.
Loving. The girl's got plenty good loving. Ask me how I know, and I'll tell you so. You used to be my girl.
All right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio. And we are talking about the greatest moments in sports history. I have an article here from Bleacher Report, where they've the author picked the 5 greatest moments in sports history, and there are more than 5, so we want to get your thoughts on it. So the phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. For your thoughts on the greatest moments in sports history, here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
How you doing, Nick?
All right.
I'd be shocked if this isn't number one, because it pretty much covers everybody in the U.S., the Miracle on Ice in 1980.
Yeah, that's according to this article, that's number one.
Yeah.
I mean, it was huge. I remember where I was when I saw it, and you know how exciting it was, and how historic it was. It really was. Yeah, Miracle on Ice is easily one of the greatest moments in sports history.
Another one would be Secretary owning the Belmont by 31 lengths.
Oh yeah, good old Secretariat.
73, 74.
Yeah.
And just probably the most incredible single sports call that I can remember. You know, just the call the guy had made when he says he is moving like a tremendous machine.
Yeah.
Just sends chills down your spine.
Yeah, yeah. That's a classic moment, too. All right, Mike, thanks.
No problem. Bye.
All right. 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open for your favorite sports moments, most memorable. Yeah, Secretariat. And then Secretariat ended up on the Craig Ferguson show. Through 312-981-7200. I remember when Ricky Gervais was on the Craig Ferguson show, and you know, you got Secretariat, you got Jeff the robot, the gay robot sidekick, and just how loose and crazy the show was. At one point, Ricky Gervais is like, "Is this really on television? Is this really a television show?" During the interview. All right. Greatest sports moments, 312-981-7200. What do you think? There's five of them that have been chosen here by this author. And the first one here is number five, is Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier. Obviously, completely historic and an unbelievably important moment, not just in sports, but in history in general. Sure, this moment isn't a game-winning shot or a championship win, but it was one of the most significant moments in the history of not just Major League Baseball, but sports in general. It was April 15th, 1947. Jackie Robinson made his Major League debut with the Brooklyn Dodgers, and in the process, Robinson also became the first African-American player to have ever played in the major leagues, marking the end of segregation in baseball as Robinson finally broke the color barrier. Robinson made his debut in front of a crowd of 26,623 fans that day, with a majority of the fans being African-American as well. Dodgers manager Leo Durocher supported Robinson when some of his teammates said that they would rather sit than play alongside a black man. He stated, "I do not care if the guy is yellow or black, or if he has stripes like a blank and zebra." Oh, Leo Durocher. I'm the manager of this team, and I say he plays. Some of the stories about Leo Durocher, man. You know, when he was with the Cubs. Do you know how many unbelievable stories that Ron Santo had about Leo Durocher?
I can't even imagine.
And just to hear the stories come out of Ron Santo's mouth, amazing. Over 60 years have gone by since Robinson debuted in the MLB, and now not only are African Americans prevalent in the MLB, but sports of all kinds. Make no doubt about it, Jackie Robinson not only broke the color barrier in baseball, but in all of sports, and really as other leagues followed suit afterwards. Historic moment. Absolutely historic.
And speaking of Leo Durocher, I love his nickname, Leo the Lip.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, Lippy. Yeah. I loved it.
See, here's Big Ed. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Best wishes to your dad, buddy.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right. My great moment in sports, 1960, Game 7, ninth inning, Bill Mazeroski's home run beats the Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a huge moment. That's
Nobody
a great
thought
moment.
Thought that was going to happen.
Yep. And that's the whole first chapter of the book that I always talk about, Underworld, is that. It takes place when the shot happened. That's when it happened. So.
What, Mazeroski?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm from Pittsburgh, and when that happened, I was just a kid.
Yeah.
But I remember the town went crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Ed, thanks.
All right.
Take care. Let's see. Here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
I'm sure your dad's probably chasing around the young nurses around the hospital. So
I hope so. I just want him to get home, man. I want him to get better and to get home. So.
Oh, he'll have the best care because he's a character.
Yeah.
All the nurses will gravitate to him for a joke.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't remember when it was. It was between 69 and 71 when Rick Monday took the flag from the hippie that was trying to burn it out in right field.
Yeah, that was in the, I think that was the early 70s. I'm pretty sure that was the early 70s.
It was during the Vietnam conflict.
Yeah.
But
you want you look, yeah, look he, that up to find out the date, Tom, for me? Rick Monday saving the American flag.
He was still with the Cubs, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. He was a Cub. Definitely.
Yeah.
He was definitely a Cub.
It happened at Wrigley Field.
It did happen at Wrigley. Yeah.
And,
yeah. We'll find out the date, but that was a big moment.
Yeah.
I was a huge Rick Monday fan. I loved.
Oh, me too.
Oh my God, I loved Rick Monday. He was one of my favorite Cubs ever.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame. I'm 65 years old, and I can almost name the whole Chicago Cubs lineup.
Yeah.
Short of center field.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was great. What was the date, Tom?
So that was in 1976. So April 25th, 1976. I've actually got a little bit of it. It's kind of rough, but a little bit of audio from
that. Not sure what he's doing out there. It looks like he's going to burn a flag, and Rick Monday runs and takes it away from him. And so Monday, I think a guy was going to set fire to the American flag. Can you imagine that? Better lose him in a hurry. And Monday, when he realized what he was going to do, raced over and took the flag away from him.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was earlier than that.
Yeah, 1976. I remember it.
Yeah.
I absolutely
do too.
I remember it. So, all right. Thank you, Rich.
All right. Yeah, take thanks. Nick. Have
right,
a good evening.
Yep. Bye. That was something, man. I loved Rick Monday. He was absolutely one of my favorite Cubs. And I remember watching that game. I was watching that game. I was like 11 years old. It was April, you said? April of 76?
April 25th.
Okay, I was 10. But yeah, Rick Monday saving the American flag. An absolute classic and great moment in sports history. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about some of the greatest moments in sports history. And, I mean, that obviously wasn't a play. That wasn't, you know, a game-winning hit. But it was a very significant event in sports history and an event at that time. But, yeah, Monday was great. Monday was a great player. So here's Don on WGN. Hi, Don.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
Okay.
Just want to let one thing on the previous caller. The Rick Monday getting the flag was at Dodger Stadium. Not
oh, it was
Wrigley.
At Dodger Stadium. Okay. Wasn't at Wrigley.
Yeah. The one that I wanted to throw is a little non-mainstream sport, but it's something that's resonated over the years, and people who knew nothing about the sport still remember it. Roger Bannister breaking 4 minutes of the mile in 1954.
Oh, okay.
Because even people who know nothing about track say, oh, did you run a four-minute mile? And people still think, wow, that's really great.
Yeah.
It's not what it used to be because a lot of people have done it. But
yeah. Yeah.
But
no,
it's
that's,
really resonated over the years.
That's absolutely significant. No question about it. Okay, hey, Don.
My favorite call of all time is when Bobby Thompson hit the home run.
That's it, Bobby Thompson, yeah. Yep, okay. All right, thank you, Don.
Thanks, Nick.
I got mixed up. Bobby Thompson home run is what opens Underworld. That's what opens Don DeLillo's Underworld.
Yeah.
The whole first chapter is about that. Like Jackie Gleason's in the crowd. They describe all the other people that are there.
Right.
And the home run ball is a significant element to this over 800-page book.
Oh, boy. I've got some audio from classic WGN audio of DeRocher doing an interview.
Is he swearing?
Oh, don't worry. I did a little scrub there.
Okay.
It's just a little clip of it. Let's take a listen here.
Well, Leo, in announcing the fines last night again after finding two more ball players, we might be in trouble with the newspaper men. Manziel was very upset about you announcing the fines over my program. What do you think of Manziel?
I have a few words for Manziel. He can go on himself.
Ha, 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 man, that's great. Oh, man. Could you imagine a manager saying that today? That's really great. That's really great. Do we know what year that was? What year was that? Was he with the Cubs at the time?
Yes, he was. So here's a little Leo DeRocher was having some fun while recording Cubs pregame interviews for Chicago's WGN radio in the late 60s.
Oh, this is on GN.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Also heard our WGN announcers, Lou Boudreau and Vince Lloyd.
Vince Lloyd and Lou Boudreau, yeah.
Can I do it one more time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Leo, in announcing the fines last night again after fining two more ball players, we might be in trouble with the newspaper men. Manziel was very upset about you announcing the fines over my program. What do you think of Manziel?
I have a few words for Manziel. He can go on himself.
Oh, man, that's funny. That is so funny. Oh, God. Leo DeRocher. What a legend, that guy. Leo the Lip. All right, you've heard the Lee Elia rant, right?
Yeah, we could get a little bit.
Yeah, let's get a little bit of the Lee Elia rant, because that was, and then again, make sure it's censored.
Don't worry, I'll take care of it.
Oh, man. I absolutely remember the Lee Elia the rant. Just ripping apart the fans and more. Oh, it's so funny. All right, we'll hear that, and we'll talk more about the greatest moments in sports history. 312-981-7200, and we'll do that after the news. Favorite Michael Jackson song. I love this song. I'm an off the wall guy, not a Thriller guy. I prefer Off the Wall.
I like that Rockin' Robin cover he did.
Yeah. I think Michael Jackson, you know, he went a little loon.
But just putting it mildly.
But for me, you know, with the Jackson 5 up until Off the Wall, he was great. And then it just kind of.
You're not a bad.
No, I think it's appropriately titled. Yeah.
Well, what about Smooth Criminal, man?
I like the Alien Ant Farm version better. Although I do like the Michael Jackson, and the video is cool as hell.
Yeah.
For Smooth Criminal, I will say that his videos were always good. Mm-hmm. So, and man, he could dance. I remember when the 25th anniversary of the Motown label, when he busted out the moonwalk for the first time. Oh my God.
Game changer.
Yeah, you want to talk about historic moments. That was really seriously in music history. That was unbelievable. Nobody had ever seen any kind of moves like that. And it was talked about around the world. Like the next day, it was like, did you see this moonwalk thing that Michael Jackson did? Yeah, that was it. Crazy time. Man, if you go back to 1983... There was no artist bigger on the planet than Michael Jackson when Thriller came out. I mean, I think there were like 8 hits off of Thriller. 8 or 9 top 10 hits.
It held the record for most singles to go number 1 for a period
of time. I mean, it was just insane, that record. Michael Jackson. All right, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up a little bit later on, we always play some comedy from Johnny Carson. We do it at 2:30. And we're going to play some stand-up from the very, very funny George Wallace. And we'll find out what year that's from. Right now, we're talking about some of the greatest moments in sports history. We want to hear from you. Got some people on the line. And I've got an article here from Bleacher Report. We've got a few more entries from that article to talk about as well. 312-981-7200. Here's Mel on WGN. Hi, Mel.
Nick, all the best to your dad, okay?
Thank you very much.
I just haven't been around the radio, but all the best to your dad. Hope he's recuperating and back home soon.
Me too. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure. I'll try to get all this out real fast. The caller before with the Roger Bannister and the 4 minute mile. Okay. Back then, I think it was October of 54, Roger Bannister was a medical student in the UK. And he wanted to prove to the world that a human being could run a sub 4 minute mile. And he ran a 3:59.9.
Wow.
And that's, you know, back then he was, and this was before, you know, he was knighted by the Queen, but as the years went on. But he was a medical student back then, wanted to prove. Now, what he had going for him, he had two what was called jackrabbits back then. Chris Chataway and Chris Brazier, these guys were like the jackrabbits who set the pace.
Okay.
And then he just poured it on, and he just had that sprinter's glide, and he had that confidence about him. And he actually, when he crossed the line, he fell into the arms of the reporters.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was really exciting back then from that side. Okay, now, oh boy, in all due respect to Michael Phelps, of course, you know, great American swimmer, what have you, back in the 72 Olympics with Mark Spitz and the 7 gold medals.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's legendary.
Yeah, well, believe me, Mark Spitz had enough hair on him. I mean, I'm in the business. For 5 guys, plus the mustache, the walrus mustache. Mustache, and of course, as the years went on, I mean, you know, you streamline all that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, plus the swimming cap or what have you. So Mark went in there and did it with 7 gold medals, with all that hair. Also, I got to throw this in. 1978, there was a horse named Affirmed, and the jockey's name was Steve Coffin. He was 18 years old. Steve Coffin won the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont.
No.
And 18-year-old kid, okay? The horse that came in second also, that was Eladar, and he came in second in all 3 races. Steve Coffin won the Triple Crown as an 18-year-old back in 78.
Wow, 18 years old.
He was 18 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy was just a master on top of that horse. I mean, you know, he just could be 18 years old. Let me do this real fast. Montreal Olympics, darn it, that thing was 84, what have you. Okay, his name was Vasily Alexeyev, obviously from the Soviet Union. And he's there. Nick, I'm telling you, the guy looked like a movie star. He looked like Victor Mature.
Mm-hmm.
And he, to cut to the chase, he approached a weight, horizontal bar, the whole thing. He was the first man to deadlift 500 pounds.
Wow.
Now, I want to tell you, he had that audience. I mean, between his looks and his demeanor and the whole 9 yards, that audience could have held their breath for 2 weeks. And when he lifted the thing, the analyst had a really great, because deadlifting it to the point where it's knee high, your feet are basically 2 or 3 inches off the ground. So you have to maintain that balance. And when he got it to chest high, the crowd almost went crazy. Lifted over his head. Now, in the ruling with the Olympics, you know, the officials tell you when to put the thing down. You don't put it down. So when he got the high sign to put it down, he put it down, picked his arms up to just address the crowd. The crowd went crazy.
Yeah.
And then he just walked off into the back.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Mel.
Nick, a pleasure. Take
all right,
care.
Take care. 312-981-7200. Here's Ron on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Nick. 1988, Kirk Gibson.
Oh, man. Run. Yeah.
You know what? You just think about the call even more than the actual home run.
I mean, just him running, that image of him just limping around the bases. It was such a great moment.
Absolutely. He could barely walk.
Yeah.
So that was mad. Okay.
Okay. All right, Ron. Thanks, man. Yeah, I'll never forget that. That was amazing. Kirk Gibson with the home run and then just like barely able to run the bases. Such a great moment, man. All right. Here's Egon on WGN. Hi, Egon.
Hi. Hi. The best to your dad. I'm going in for surgery tomorrow morning.
Well, good luck to you, too.
Yeah. 1947. I was 13 years old. Well, I went over to Wrigley Field, bought a standing room only ticket to stand in the upper grandstand at Wrigley Field to watch Jackie Robinson play in Chicago as a major leaguer for the first
time. Wow, that's really amazing. And you were there?
I was there, and nobody was booing. It was It was nice.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Nice. That's a great memory.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay, thanks, Egon. Good luck tomorrow, buddy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Here's Andrew on WGN. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. My moment was in 2001, about a week after 9/11, they postponed the baseball season and the football season about a week. And this was the first game. It was the Mets and the Braves. It was the first game following the attack, so there was a special buzz in the air.
Yeah.
And during the seventh inning stretch, they did a special thing. They had Liza Minnelli, who was very associated with doing theater on Broadway. They had her come out, and she was locked arm in arm with on both sides with various New York policemen and New York firemen, singing New York, New York.
Oh, wow.
And she was giving like some chorus line kicks, not really high, but it put some pizzazz into the performance.
Yeah.
So, that's one I'll always remember.
Yeah.
And then Mike Piazza hit a game-winning home run, and it was significant because the Braves at the time were the number one nemesis of the Mets. So,
yeah. Okay. All right, great. Thank you, Andrew.
You're welcome.
Okay. Do we have let's take a break, and we have some Lee Elia. As much as that rant is insane, I don't think anybody could top Leo DeRocher. All right. More great moments in sports. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. What are your favorites, and which ones do you remember? And we'll get back to it right here on 720 WGN. Love that song, too. Hello, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4, and we would love to talk to you at 312-981-7200. Coming up, we'll have some Carson Comedy Classics. We always play a little bit of comedy from the Johnny Carson Show. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV, and every morning at 2:30, we play back some comedy, whether it's a sketch or an interview or some stand-up, and we're going to hear some stand-up from George Wallace. That's coming up at 2:30. Really dumb schemes that actually people made money on. And an elaborate pistachio scheme. I don't even know what that means. But that's coming up. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right now, we've been talking about some of the greatest moments in sports history. We played a little Leo DeRocher, Leo the Lip. So one of the other legendary rants made by a Cubs manager was in 1983, I think it was, and everybody remembers the Lee Elia rant. Do we have a little bit of the Lee Elia rant?
I'll tell you one thing. I hope we get hotter than just to put up them 3,000 people that show up every day, because if they're the real Chicago fans, they can kiss my ass right downtown and print it.
The rest of it, there's also a part where it's like, don't these people work? They don't have a job, and they just come here. That was huge, and really funny. All right, here's Fran on WGN. Hi, Fran.
Hey, good
Good morning. A prayers for Dan.
Thank you.
I was at the stadium when Bobby Hall, on March 12, 1966, hit the first 50th goal. I knew nothing about Blackhawks. My friend took me.
Yeah.
People threw everything on the ice.
Yeah.
I had one pair of shoes, and the guy next to me was looking at him. And I said, oh, my God, please, no. It's the only pair I have. But they threw everything on the ice. It was unbelievable.
Well, that was back when the madhouse on Madison, when it was really nuts. I mean, the old Chicago, going to a hockey game, going to a Hawks game at the old Chicago Stadium was nuts. I mean,
oh my God, standing room only.
Yep. I used to stand up in the third balcony all the time at the old stadium and see those games. Yeah. All right, Fran, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Yeah.
You know, as great as it is to, you know, to at some point we'll go back, you know, and hopefully go back to the UC and watch some live hockey. As great as it is to go to the UC and see a Hawks game, those days at the Chicago Stadium were insane. They were absolutely insane.
It's like the last days of Rome, man.
It was nuts, and the smoke was everywhere because, you know, you could smoke inside the stadium.
That that blows my mind.
You're looking through a haze of cigarette smoke down on the ice, especially if you're up.
Yeah,
because we would go up. We would just get, you know, standing room tickets and go up to the third balcony.
Yeah, you're getting a nicotine buzz just from being in there.
It was insane. Crazy, and the crowds would go nuts. That's how it got the name, Madhouse on Madison. It was different when the Bulls played, much calmer crowd. But for some reason, you know, hockey fans are nuts. All right. Some of the other greatest moments in sports. Jesse Owens dominates the 1936 Olympics. Is considered the fourth greatest moment in sports. At the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, Germany, American track and field athlete Jesse Owens dominated the competition. Owens claimed 4 gold medals in the 100 meters, 200 meters, the long jump, and was a member of the gold medal winning American quartet that won the 4x 100 meter relay. Why was his performance so historic? Well, not only was Owens an African American man who was dominating the rest of the world's best athletes, but Owens also debunked the Aryan myth. You see, Hitler used the 1936 Olympics to show the resurgence of Nazi Germany. Hitler and the Nazi propaganda thought that Aryans were a superior race and therefore African Americans were considered inferior. Yeah. How about this? The considered number 3, Michael Jordan's final shot in a Bulls uniform. Was that the shot? Was that in Game 6 of the 1998 NBA Finals, the Chicago Bulls trailed the Utah Jazz in the final minute of the game, trailing by a score of 86-85 and the game clock under 30 seconds, and the Jazz with possession of the ball, the Bulls needed a big play. Michael Jordan stole the ball from Jazz forward Karl Malone. He stole it from Karl Malone, yeah, and headed to the opposite end of the court with the Bulls needing to score. Jordan headed to the top of the key with less than 10 seconds remaining. He shook defender Brian Russell off and, with a crossover and a bit of a push, he nailed a mid-range jumper, giving the Bulls a slim 87-86 lead over the Jazz. The Jazz couldn't answer back, and Jordan's shot proved to be the difference in the game as the Bulls went on to win Game 6 and claim their 6th NBA title in 8 years. Jordan had plenty of iconic, memorable plays in his career, but why does this one stand out? For starters, this shot clinched Jordan's 6th NBA championship. This shot was also the last shot Jordan ever took while wearing a Chicago Bulls uniform, as Air Jordan fittingly went out on top. The shot is one of the most memorable and clutch shots in the history of basketball, and of course it was taken by the greatest athlete to ever live, Michael Jordan. That was huge. How about Hank Aaron breaks Babe Ruth's home run record, mentioned a little bit earlier. It was April 8, 1974. Hammer and Hank Aaron clobbered home run number 715 into the left corner and broke the career home run record of 714 home runs that was once set by Babe Ruth. Aaron ended the 1973 season with 713 home runs and was afraid that he would not live to see the 1974 season due to constant death threats he received from people who did not want to see a black man break a white man's record, especially one as glorious and meaningful as the all-time home run record in the major leagues. Fortunately, Aaron did live to see the 74 season and broke the home run record in front of a crowd of 53,775 in Atlanta. So, and this was only 27 years after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball. An African-American man now had become the proud owner of perhaps the most prolific record in all of baseball, and if not sports. With this accomplishment, Hank Aaron set new standards for African-Americans in sports as he claimed the all-time home run record. Again, never forget watching that. Never forget watching that. And then finally, this author has chosen as number one the greatest moments in sports history, the Miracle on Ice, which I think is apropos. I think that makes sense. The 1980 Miracle on Ice was, quite frankly, the greatest moment in the history of sports, along with the greatest upset in the history of sports as well. The United States Olympic hockey team was made up of a bunch of talented college players, but they were no match for the USSR's Olympic hockey team, which had won the gold medal in 64, 68, 72, and 76, or so we thought. Only months before the game took place, the American team lost to the USSR team in a 10-3 drubbing, proving that Americans were far outmatched by the Soviets. The United States team proved how much they had improved, though. At the time around, the Americans won the game score 4-3, capping off the greatest upset in the history of sports, as well as the greatest moment in the history of sports. And it was David versus Goliath. So, you know, they made two movies about it. One was a TV movie, and the other one, obviously, was Kurt Russell, called Miracle, but the other one was called A Miracle on Ice. It was a TV movie, and Steve Guttenberg was in it. Here's Taxi Driver Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, it wasn't an actual play or anything, memorable play, but when I was in junior high, they had a trip that you'd go to Washington. I don't know if you had that in your junior high or whatever, but my dad said, well, would you want to go on that with your classmates, or do you want to go with me to New York, with my mom, to New York City? And I said, no, I want to go to New York City. So we got to New York, and my dad had reservations in a hotel called the Essex House right on Central Park.
Yep, I've stayed there. Yep.
And so we checked our bags in. We went to the desk and all that straightened out, and so we were going to the elevator. And I kind of look behind me, and I see three really large black dudes behind us. I didn't take a real good glance at it, and a glance at the guys. But as they were walking to the elevator, was Hank Aaron, Earl Williams, who was a catcher for the Braves at that time, and one other player. And he gets in the same elevator that we were in, and I said, "Dad, do you know who this is?" He says, "No. This is Hammer and Hank." And so I was able to get his autograph.
Oh, that's cool.
And my dad, I don't know if I ever told you, but one of my dad's hobbies was to write screenplays. And he wrote like 10 or 12 musical comedies. And so we were able to see Sugar on Broadway.
Okay. And then all right. Okay, Bob, I got to get to the news. Thank you.
No problem. You have
a good one. All right. And by the way, Al Michaels' call on the Miracle on Ice, do you believe in miracles? Legendary. Absolutely legendary.
Do you believe in miracles?
Yep. All right. We are going to talk about some dumb schemes where people actually did make money. 312-981-7200, and that's after the news.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing somewhere.
Yes. The sea. Hello, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. As we are every weekday morning from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. After 4, we head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN. Get some early morning news from that great team, and then it's back here for the one and only, the legendary Bob Surratt, who starts at 5. You know Bob Surratt's a legend, right, Tom? He's a radio legend. You know that.
I've been told.
Yeah.
I received a memo the other day.
I used to listen to him. I don't want to make him sound like he's old, but I used to listen to him when I was a kid.
Hmm.
In the big 89.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Playing that rock and roll stuff that kids are all listening to.
You know, my mom didn't know that Records was John Landecker's middle name, speaking of that era.
John Records Landecker. He's been filling in for Roe, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been filling in for Roe. He filled in for Bob for a bit.
Yeah.
For about a week, I want to say.
John's a great guy.
Yeah. Well, I told my mom, I was like, hey, you remember John Landecker, right? She's like, yeah, I used to love John.
Records truly is my middle name.
Well, yeah. And I said, yeah, John Records Landecker. And she's like, what? Like, yeah, John Records Landecker, and Records really, it really is my middle name. She's like, oh, I didn't know that. That's kind of funny. I was like, I thought you listened to him back in the day. She's like, yeah, I did.
That's what he used to say all the time.
It's like, that was the thing.
Yeah.
That was the bit.
By the way, his daughter, terrific actress.
Amy? Oh, yeah.
Terrific actress. Landecker. She's great. All right. So, I'm trying to wrap my mind around this headline here, and we're going to read the story. Listen, have you ever been a part of a scheme? You know, soliciting money online, you know, a lot of scam artists are doing that. You ever been a victim of that? You ever been a part of a scheme? Remember when you would get emails from that from the prince?
What, the Nigerian prince?
Yeah, the Nigerian prince.
Yeah.
Asking for money.
Mm-hmm. That's a classic.
Did people fall for that?
They did.
Yeah, some people
did. In droves.
Some people did. You know, we talk about these kind of these schemes are trying to get money from people online. We talk about it a lot with Herb Weisbaum, mm-hmm. Our consumer guy, and it's rampant. And you know, people get taken all the time. You got to be careful. You just got to be careful. So one arrested in, quote, an elaborate scheme to steal and resell pistachios. $350,000 in nuts and trailers recovered. This is a huge thing. Well, pistachios are already pretty expensive. And the shells aren't red anymore. You know? They used to be red. They dye the shells red. And now they're not anymore.
Nope, they're regular pistachio.
They're like tan colored.
Yeah.
But they used to be red. They used to be colored red. And you don't remember that?
Nope. They've always just kind of looked like, you know, nuts. They look like
They were dyed red. The shell, the outer shell was dyed red.
Is there a particular reason why?
There was a reason. I think we discussed this before. There was a reason why they were dyed red. And I can't remember what it was. I think it had to do with shipping.
Well, here's what it is. This is from nuts.com.
Yeah, man, nuts.
Who doesn't love a nice
nut?
Nut, yeah, a nice sack of nuts. Due to antiquated harvesting methods, nut shells were often left with ugly stains and splotches. Foreign pistachio producers dyed the pistachios with a bright red color in an effort to hide the stains and make the nuts more appealing to consumers.
Oh, okay.
So they just wanted you, they wanted you to find their nuts appealing.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be on the show tomorrow. So they were red. And you remember the scene in Naked Gun?
Mm-hmm.
When they're on the stakeout,
right?
And he's eating pistachios, and his mouth is all red, his fingers are all red, and then he opens up the car door, and there's like a mountain of empty pistachios. Yeah, I love pistachios. I think they're great.
Yeah, they're all right. They're not my favorite type of nut.
I like pistachio ice cream too.
Mm-hmm.
Agriculture detectives.
Orion's got to be in on this.
Is this a thing? Is that a real? That's a thing?
Agriculture detectives.
Agriculture detectives. I didn't realize that was a thing. Look that up. Agriculture detectives recently arrested a Fresno man involved in an elaborate scheme to steal and resell pistachios, as other arrests are expected, as more than $350,000 in stolen nuts and trailers are recovered, according to the county sheriff's office. Detectives were called to Seton Pistachio,
in Tarabella on August 14th for a possible cargo theft, said spokeswoman Ashley Ritchie. Arriving detectives found the suspect stole the entire identity of a legitimate trucking company. Then they used that company's name to secure contracts for the delivery of two tractor trailer loads of pistachios worth more than $294,000. Holy cow. This is a caper. Instead of delivering the product, the suspects took the pistachios to an abandoned property in Selma where they removed the packaging. They then sold the nuts to an unsuspecting buyer in Madera County. Detectives found the suspects developed an elaborate scheme to carry out their plan, Ritchie said. The suspects used a big rig and stole two trailers from a Fresno business. The trailers were equipped with real-time GPS trackers. Deputies contacted the owner of the company and were able to track down the suspects as well as all of the pistachios in the stolen trailers. As the crime scene spanned three counties, multiple law enforcement agencies were able to track down Bhavna Singh Sikhan, 23, of Fresno, as a suspect responsible for the theft, said Ritchie. He was found at his home, arrested, and booked into the county jail on charges of grand theft, looting, identity theft, and conspiracy. Detectives expect additional arrests will take place, and they found more evidence linking Sikhan to the thefts at his house. In total, detectives recovered $294,000 in pistachios and $60,000 in trailers. That's quite the caper. The pistachio caper, as they're going to call it when they make a movie out of it.
Who's going to be in this? I'm going to say Liam Neeson, minimum.
Liam Neeson?
Yeah, Liam Neeson as an agricultural law enforcer.
Agricultural detective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you smell over there, Detective Neeson? Bananas.
Yeah, okay. All right, so that's a scheme right there. And we're going to talk now about some dumb schemes that people actually made money on. And if you've ever been a part of a scheme or had to, you know, been taken, speaking of Liam Neeson, been taken by a kind of a scheme, because they happen online all the time. You got to be careful, as we always discuss with Herb Weisbaum. We want to hear your story at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Right here on 720 WGN. Sorry, still thinking about Leo DeRocher and his quote. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. In just a few minutes, after the 2:30 news, we always play some classic Johnny Carson bits, whether it's a sketch or an interview or some stand-up. And we'll play some stand-up from George Wallace on the Tonight Show. And you can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV. And then every morning at 2:30, we play back some classic comedy from Johnny Carson. 312-981-7200. Have you ever heard of some really goofy schemes in order to get people's money? If you ever have been a part of it, or if you remember some sort of legendary ones, like the Nigerian Prince thing. That was everywhere in the late 90s, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. It was probably the earliest example of an email scheme I can think of.
That's the first one that would pop into my mind.
Yeah, that or like those chain letters you used to get.
Yeah.
Where it's like, Mary Sue, you know, died on this day, yeah, and she died looking into the mirror. And if you don't look into the mirror and send this to 10 friends,
yeah,
you're going to die.
Well, that was back in the day, they were actually mailed, like real letters.
Oh, literal chain letters.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know. About,
oh yeah, no, that was a real thing. They were real letters that were mailed, you know, through the post office and in your mailbox.
Right.
So here are some schemes here that people actually made money on. And if you want to jump in with if you remember some legendary schemes, or if you've ever been a part of one, 312-981-7200.
It's the Team Hochberg phone line, 312-981-7200. This is from didyouknowfacts.com. What do you find on didyouknowfacts.com? Facts?
I'm going to give you two guesses. You get facts. Get some fun facts.
I've never heard of this website. Didyouknowfacts.com. You go there often?
Do I go there often? When looking for some facts, sometimes.
Well, that seems to be the place to go if you're looking for facts.
Yeah, I don't trust Wikipedia.
The author here says, I've never attempted to solicit money from the masses online, so I'm not really sure how it works. I've supported friends' music and film projects in the past, but these stories from Ask Reddit about people asking for cold hard cash for the most ridiculous reasons really blew me away. All right, are we ready for this? The first one, Tinder for adoptions. What does that mean? Tinder's a dating app, right?
Mm-hmm. So imagine instead of swiping for dates, swiping for children.
Okay, that's ridiculous. If you've ever been on the dating app Tinder, you know it allows you to swipe left if you find a potential mate unappealing, or right if you want to meet up. Well, someone managed to raise $4,000 online to create a similar program, except instead of adults, you get to swipe left or right on children in your area who are up for adoption. That is ridiculous. And they ended up getting $4,000 out of people. The proposed idea was called Adoptly and was meant to speed up the adoption process. In other words, in the words of the developers, once you've created a parenting profile, simply set your search criteria, and Adoptly will instantly filter through our database, bringing the broadcast range of adoptable kids straight to your fingertips. Just swipe right if you're interested and left to keep looking. And if a kid, through their agency or foster care, likes you back, it's a match. All those uncomfortable feelings you're experiencing right now, apparently they never occurred to the people who pitched this idea or the people who funded it. The campaign fell well short of its $150,000 goal, and that's probably a good thing. Adoption probably shouldn't be as easy as arranging a one-night stand in college. On the bright side, the only comment on the Kickstarter page reads, "No way this is real." So maybe it was all an elaborate joke, but they ended up getting four grand from people online. There's a scheme. And we're talking about schemes. You ever been a part of one? Do you remember some of the classic ones? 312-981-7200. Adoptly?
Yeah, that seems like a pretty bad idea.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't even know how they made a dime on that, but they got $4,000 out of some people.
Well, you know, it's that thing where the sort of tech startup culture, if someone presents you with an idea, you think you can get in at the bottom level, or maybe you're desperate. You know, maybe some people, the adoption process is long and arduous.
Yeah.
Although probably for good reason, because you're adopting a human child.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't want to treat that with the same flippancy that I treat Tinder dates.
Yeah.
Can you imagine having to explain to your kid that that's how they came into your life?
I got you from Adoptly. Yeah. Tinder.
Mommy, daddy, where do babies come from? Well, son, when a mommy and a daddy love each other very much, they sit down on their phone and flip blithely through pictures of children and decide which one they want, kind of like a McDonald's breakfast sandwich.
I can't, I seriously can't believe that anybody would believe that.
Yeah. I mean, there are
gullible people out there, yeah, for sure, and I know there are a lot of people who go through the internet and get taken a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, we talk about this with Herb all the time. If you've been a part of a scheme or you remember some of the sort of maybe legendary ones, 312-981-7200. All right, here's the next one. It's just called "This is Outrageous." There's another scheme here. A man named Zach Brown. Isn't there a musician named Zach Brown?
There is.
What's he do?
He plays the guitar. He's a country music
singer. Country guy, right?
Yeah, I saw him once.
I think I saw him on SNL.
Yeah, he was probably on SNL.
I remember liking him.
Yeah, it was good, man. Yeah, not bad. I watched him do The Devil Went Down to Georgia. That was pretty good.
Yeah, no, he's good. It's not the same guy, though. I don't want people to think that the musician Zach Brown is doing some schemes. It's a different Zach Brown altogether. So a man named Zach Brown started a campaign asking for $10 to make potato salad. wait a minute. Let me repeat that. Just so you make sure you heard it right. A man named Zach Brown started a campaign asking for $10 to make potato salad. This is one you told me about off the air. Listen to this. He raised $55,492 by the time the campaign ended. That's a lot of potato salad.
$55,000 worth of potato salad.
Was it the mayonnaise-based potato salad, or was it the vinegar-based potato salad? Do we know?
That's a good question. Hoping it was mayonnaise-based. I'm a big fan of the mayonnaise-based.
It would be more expensive to make the mayonnaise-based than it would the vinegar-based, because vinegar's pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. Mayonnaise, though. That's white gold.
$10 for potato salad. He raised $55,492 by the time the campaign ended. He eventually wrote a potato salad cookbook, so at least he did something to earn the money. Still, though, ask and you shall receive. A potato salad cookbook? What would that consist of?
Recipes for potato salad? It would be my first guess.
Well, yeah. Or using potato salad in recipes?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things you could probably do with potato salad or style. You know, there's potato salad with raisins in it.
Yeah.
There's, actually, I can't think of any other variations of potato salad other than mayonnaise or vinegar based.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, what? You put potatoes?
I like them both. I like both the mayonnaise and the vinegar based.
I'm open to the idea.
I prefer the mayonnaise,
mm-hmm.
but I still enjoy.
It's thicker. It's creamier.
Yeah. You like macaroni salad?
I do like a bit of macaroni salad.
I love macaroni salad. We get it at the Jewel, the Chef's Kitchen. They've got great macaroni salad at Chef's Kitchen at Jewel.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Last time when I was staying with my folks, mm-hmm. My dad went over to the Jewels and got a bunch of cold cuts and a big tub of macaroni salad, and I was in heaven.
Ooh.
It's nothing like a nice cold cut sandwich and a big pile of macaroni salad on the side. I'm making myself hungry now.
Yeah, dude, I'm starving. Right. What have you done?
I don't know. Well, anyway, you can get this potato salad cookbook from Zach Brown. He ended up with $55,492 just because he wanted to make potato salad. All right. Okay, more crazy schemes coming up. After the 2:30 news, and also some stand-up from The Carson Show with George Wallace. That's coming up, but let's get to the news.
Blue jean baby, L.A. lady.
Hello.
Seamstress for the
Nick DiGilio is me. 312-981-7200 is the phone. All right.
Sorry, yeah. No, that was just funny.
All right.
Made me laugh.
312-981-7200. We're going to get back to the conversation about dumb schemes that people actually made money on. If you remember some sort of legendary schemes that were making the rounds, or if you've been a part of one, we want to hear your story at 312-981-7200. Right now, we take a break for some comedy. We could all use a laugh or two during this time. I love Johnny Carson, and you can watch the Johnny Carson Show on Antenna TV every night. So we like to play some comedy directly from the Johnny Carson Show. Sometimes it's a sketch, sometimes it's an interview, and sometimes it's stand-up, which is the case. Do we have the year on this one?
1980.
Ooh, okay. Going way back for George Wallace, because he's still working.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's still
working. Always out there. Yeah. He's funny as hell.
Super funny.
So this is from 1980. It's from the Johnny Carson Show. Again, you can watch it every night on Antenna TV. This is some vintage stand-up from the very funny George Wallace.
Hello, good evening, good evening. How you doing? That's great. That's what we're here for, to have a good time. Greetings from New York City. You ever notice you mention New York City or Chicago, people always applause? How about a hand for the great people right here in the state of California? That's good. That's good, because you people are the people I want to talk to. Why do you people drive so fast? Where's everybody going in such a hurry? Everybody's going zoom, zoom, like a bat out of hell. There's a game out here you people play. You call it drive and cuss. You got hand signals and everything. And you all like to play this game. That's why you all live 50 miles from where you work. Just so you can play the game. Now, I don't believe in drugs, but I do think there should be a pharmacist on every on-ramp to give you suckers two Valium just to calm you down before you get on that freeway. Everybody's driving like crazy. One thing you got in California we don't have back in New York. Put your foot on the street, everybody stops for you. What a law. Put your foot on the street. That thing fascinates me. Sometimes for the hell of it, I just go. Now, you try that in New York. Your head would be a hood on me. Can you picture my head on a white Rolls Royce? And Rolls, I have never seen so many Rolls, Mercedes, Porsches in my life. Gas guzzlers. We've got to get rid of these gas guzzlers. What we need now are disposable cars. We need big cars. Gillette cars. Drive them around for 2 weeks, they run out of gas, throw them away. Matter of fact, everything should be disposable, right? We should even have disposable girlfriend and boyfriend. Use them once, get rid of them. Just like in real life. Crazy world, isn't it? Crazy world. And I got my driver's license not too long ago out here. Crazy questions on the test. Question 14, you took the test. It says, if an old man is walking across the street, what do you do? A, swerve. B, apply brakes. C, teach him a lesson. It's crazy world. And you know what? I thought all the freaks lived in New York City. You got some freaks right here in California. Yes, especially in Hollywood. Everybody's a freak in Hollywood. Even the doctors are freakish in Hollywood. You ever go to a doctor in Hollywood, he gives you a shot, gives himself one too. Huh? They're all freaks. They're all freaks. Even the churches are freakish. I went to one church, they had six commandments and four do the best you can. They're all freaks. I don't even want to mention the freakish L.A. cops. Did you read last month where the cop shot this man and killed him? Then the cop said it was in self-defense because the man was on his way home to get a gun. They're all freaks. Now, don't misunderstand me now. We still have some freaks back in New York. Yes, we do. A freak came up to me last week in Central Park and put a gun right to my head. He says, who are you for, Reagan or Carter? I thought about it for a minute. I said, go ahead and shoot. It's a crazy, so many crazy things. I just flew out here on one of those discount airlines, $99. Now, with a fare like that, you know they're cutting back on something. First of all, you got to bring your own toilet paper. You see, the airline doesn't have a schedule. It just waits till like 200 or 300 people get together, and they say, where you going, mister? Chicago? Go ahead and get on. How about you, mister? Where you going? Cleveland? Go ahead and get on. We don't stop, but we'll push you off. Go ahead. Go ahead. And we're flying along for about 2 hours. The pilot comes back, wakes me up, and tells me it's my turn to fly the plane. I'm going, what do you mean, my turn to fly the plane? He says, with a fare like this, everybody's got to take turns flying the plane. I said, what about that blind guy over there? He says, don't worry about him. He already flew his 2 hours. I hate these discount airlines. You see, they not only lose luggage, they lose passengers. I heard the man explain it. Now, listen, I know your mother was on this flight. But these things happen. So you just have to file a claim. Then he took out a little chart and said, did she look like any of these other mothers here? Say, was she a new bag or an old bag? I hate these cheap discount airlines. I flew one about 3 months ago up to Tahoe. I'm up there at Sahara Hotel. 1,800 people in the room, still snowing, believe it or not. I asked a question, anybody ski today? Yeah, we ski. Some dumb in the audience stands up, shouts out, how come you don't see more black people skiing? I told him, hell, I guess it's hard to ski with a pole in one hand and a radio in another, you know?
Funny, still funny. This guy is still funny. You know, I love his delivery. I saw him at Zany's years ago, and he was just great. He was just great. Still working, too. You can still see him on TV doing his thing. That's a classic stand-up comedian right there. Hey, listen, for tomorrow, Friday at 2:30 in the morning, when we play our Carson Comedy Classics, it's going to be a fun one because it'll be Ray Romano's first appearance on The Tonight Show. Ray Romano's first appearance on The Tonight Show. So, I guess I rediscovered how funny Everybody Loves Raymond is. Because I never really watched it regularly. I've been watching it now. And it's also a really sweet show.
Oh, incredibly.
You know, like every episode I've watched, I'm like, wow, that's really nice. That's really sweet. It's also very funny.
You know, my dad always used to love it because it reminded him of his own life from when I was really little. We lived right next to my grandparents' house.
Oh, boy.
It was literally the house right next door over on the northwest side.
Did his brother live with them?
No.
Oh.
He didn't.
Was his brother a cop?
No. Yeah, I think his roommate, Big Tony, had moved out after he got married and they had me. But my grandmother and grandfather would just show up out of the blue.
Yeah.
And it was just the whole, the whole
it was
thing.
That show was so the show is very, very funny.
Deborah!
And you gotta love Peter Boyle.
Peter Boyle's amazing.
He's unbelievable. He's
unbelievable.
And so you know who's great on that show, who I think is like the kind of the core of the show? Patricia Heaton.
Oh yeah, Patricia. I mean, and the career she got to have following that.
Because she was on The Middle for
middle
years.
The Middle was huge. Yeah. Huge show.
Yep. All right. Well, there you go. So we'll play some more Carson Comedy. All right. Phone lines are open. We want to get back into the talking about dumb schemes that people actually made money on. Do you remember any sort of the legendary schemes that were making the rounds? And have you ever been a part of one? We want to hear your story at 312-981-7200. I got some weather for you. Today, breezy, hot, humid. We'll have some cumulus clouds. Scattered afternoon or evening thunderstorms are possible. High of 95. Tonight, partly cloudy, warm, muggy. Several clusters of thunderstorms, some capable of downpours with a low of 78. For tomorrow, Friday, clouds mixed with sun continue hot and humid. Clusters of showers and thunderstorms. High 92. Temperatures will vary in and near the thunderstorms. For Saturday, mostly sunny, fairly windy, cooler and less humid with a high of 84. Well, that sounds more like it. Sunday, sunny, comfortable, high of 79 and cooler near the lake. And then Monday, clouding over, windy, growing prospects for showers or thunderstorms and a high of 78. So we just got to get through a couple of hot days and some rainy hot days, and then we'll cool off a little bit. O'Hare right now, 80 degrees at O'Hare, 79 at Midway and 78 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get back to the conversation about dumb schemes that people actually made money on. And we want to hear from you. Have you ever been taken by a scheme? Do you remember some of the more legendary schemes that were making the rounds? Call us at 312-981-7200. Right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. We are going to jump back into the conversation about dumb schemes that people actually made money on, and they're all real. And we want to talk about some of the schemes that maybe you've been a part of or the legendary ones that you remember. And we're also going to talk about some of the crazy ways that people have saved their own lives. And a California man used cans of Bud Light to put out a wildfire.
And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. If you want to jump in here, we're talking about some schemes, some famous schemes. And I've got an article here that details some of the dumb schemes people actually ended up making money on. Let's go to the phones. Here's Ike. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Okay, this is a big example how the quarantine can let out the worst of people than the best, because a lot of people are at home trying to get money and they can't work. And this is a total goldmine for these type of scumbags. You've heard of Cash App, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's these Facebook pages that you can go on. These Cash App Facebook pages where people supposed to give you money if you're in a jam. And I was a victim to that. I gave them money. And I gave them money, but they didn't give me any money back. I was like, I can't believe it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we talk about this all the time when we have Herb Weisbaum on, about how these guys have no conscience, and the criminals, you know, even during a pandemic and when people are filled with anxiety, they take advantage of it. So that's what happened. I'm sorry that happened to you, Ike. Have a good night. Thanks for calling. Here's Beth on WGN. Hi, Beth.
Good night, Nick. I mean, hello, Nick.
Hi.
I'm a little north of the border, so it's been some troubling times. I'm glad to hear you tonight.
Okay.
So, first of all, the biggest scheme, my mom told me she made that macaroni salad from the Jewels.
Oh, I see. Okay, so when you were a kid, you said that she was telling you that she actually made
it. Out of the bucket and put it in a bowl. No.
Yeah.
No, but remember, I can draw a cat?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, the guy would make stick figure cats and sell them for $10, and people actually bought them.
Yeah, that's there are a lot of gullible people out there, Beth.
No, I think they just really wanted the little cat. I mean, people knew what it was. You could see what it was. Right?
I guess. I didn't buy any, Beth, so I don't know.
I didn't buy one either. If I want to draw a cat, I have a pencil.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
Beth.
But
the other thing is that, hang on. Tom and I were talking about the difference between a scheme and a prank.
Uh-huh.
A scheme means you make money on it.
Right.
But a prank was whenever us kids were old enough to go look for worms, we'd go snipe hunting. So my father would make us standing in the front yard or in the backyard with a flashlight in a bag, and we had to yell, "Here, snipe, here, snipe, here, snipe." And he'd say, "Now I'll go around to the front yard and beat the snipes out of the bushes so that you can run around and get in your bag."
Okay, I don't understand any of what you just said, Beth.
You never heard of the snipe hunt?
Absolutely not.
It's an old trick where if you're going—
Thanks, Beth.
If you're going camping, like your dad takes you out camping, he sends you on a snipe hunt.
No idea what that is.
It's
never heard of it. I've been alive for 55 years and I've never heard of that.
Well, it's a fictional gag to make you believe that there's like this thing out there called the snipe and you have to go find it. And it's just a wild goose chase. There's no such thing as a snipe.
Well, no. So that's what happens. You go out and you're looking for a snipe. What's the point?
To watch kids just hopelessly look for something that doesn't exist.
That's really sweet. That's good parenting. All right, we got more schemes here, and if you want to be you want to talk to us about maybe some of the more famous ones or maybe something that you were a part of, 312-981-7200. How about this one, Tom? When the Powerball lottery jackpot made it to $1.6 billion, this one family used all their food and bill money to buy tickets, convinced that a couple of hundred or thousand tickets would guarantee that they would win, even though the odds were 290 million to one. Surprise, they didn't win. So now they had no money for food, gas, and bills for the rest of the month. What do? They start a GoFundMe asking people to help them out, maybe even raise enough to try the lottery again the following week. Come on, man. You play the lottery, Tom?
Not really.
No.
I think the only time I've ever bought a lottery ticket was when I graduated from high school. I went and bought a lottery ticket just because I thought it would be fun.
Uh-huh.
I've done the scratch-offs here and there.
I've done scratch-offs here and there.
I
don't
play. Even like $5
I don't
or something
play
like that.
The actual regular like drawings lottery.
Yeah. I think the most I ever won on a scratch-off was I won $15, and I went and I bought McDonald's breakfast for everyone.
Wow.
That was it.
Who was everyone?
Me and like two other people.
Yeah, because $15 is not going to buy a whole room full of people.
They got some deals over at that McDonald's.
Yeah. All right, how about this? This is somebody saying, hey, the dad of a buddy of mine, dude worked a 9-to-5 until the day his youngest kid turned 18. Then he went full hippie. He has no money. He's constantly on Facebook saying stuff like, oh, wow, that trip looks fun. Wish I could go. Or if someone posts a picture of their pet, he'll comment, if we had more money, we could have saved our dear old dog, Bessie. One day, he got the fancy idea to start a GoFundMe with the title, We Need Your Support to Survive. He posts it on his Facebook 5 to 10 times a day. After a while, when he had only raised $37.50 in funds, he started to message the link to everyone. Did you see the link? Are you going to support? It started there. It ended up leaving him leaving comments on people's pictures. Oh, you seem to have enough money for a night out. Wish some of that money would find its way to my GoFundMe. And it continued. And this guy says it was unbelievable. Oh, man. GoFundMe. 312-981-7200 if you remember some of these big scams that were out. I mean, you know, now that everybody's online and we all go to the internet, we all do the social pages. A lot of people more vulnerable now, especially older people who don't really know how to navigate the internet. Okay, here's another one. A girl I went to high school with made a GoFundMe with a goal of $4,000 so that she could go to Spain for a photography trip. She goes to a state college, her parents pay her tuition, and she drives around in a Range Rover. Let's help her out. Let's help her get to Spain for that photography trip. A goal of $4,000. I wonder how much she got. There's a lot of crazy GoFundMes out there that you probably shouldn't, send money to. I think that would be like a regular thing, right? So. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Do you remember any famous schemes? Have you ever been a part of a scheme? 312-981-7200. That's our number. Our phone lines are open. We'll jump back into the conversation here in a few minutes. We've got some more schemes here. I think one of the more memorable ones that we've gone through here, I mean, there's some of these are just goofy, but I still think that the Zach Brown campaign asking for $10 to make potato salad and then ended up raising $55,492 by the end of the campaign. That one might take the cake. That one just might take the cake. And the detail that the guy's name is Zach Brown, I think, is pretty funny too. So, oh yeah. More crazy and stupid schemes. If you've ever been a part of one or you remember sort of some legendary ones, we'll get into that. We'll tell you the story about a California man who uses cans of Bud Light to put out a wildfire and then some crazy ways that people have saved their own lives. That's coming up, but we're going to continue talking about some of these dumb schemes. And if you've ever, you remember any or have you ever been a part of one, we would love to hear from you right here on WGN. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And more scheme conversation to come. But let's get to the news. Oh, yeah. All right. Dick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline studio till 4 o'clock. As we are every weekday, night into morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. Following this show at 4 o'clock, headed over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN. Get some news and information and early morning news from that great team. And then back here at 5, Morning Drive with the one and only Bob Surratt. 312-981-7200. That's our phone number. We would love to hear from you if you remember scams or schemes, some sort of legendary ones. And we've got some of the dumbest schemes here that people actually made money on, including a guy who raised $55,000 because he started a campaign for $10, asking for $10 to make potato salad. So some of these are very ridiculous. Yeah, we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. That's the Team Hochburn phone line. All right, let's get back to some of this. These are real. A family I know were literally trying to raise money online to buy themselves a new car because they had run their son over with the old one. The kid died. It's the most tasteless, insensitive thing that I've ever seen in my life. Okay, that's just crazy. That is just crazy. Oh, man. Raising money to buy their new car because they ran over their son with the old one. Wow. All right. Here's another one. I know this Christian fundamentalist couple who made a big deal that the wife would never need to work outside of the home once they were married. I guess that was part of their faith that women shouldn't have to earn a living or something. They filmed the whole congregation of their church going into her office on her last day of employment to, quote-unquote, bring her home for good. It was just very bizarre, but that's not the most bizarre part. After they married, the husband decided to make some extra money on the side by exporting firearms without a license and falsifying export documents. Very religious man. He got caught, was sent to prison. So they started a GoFundMe to raise money so that the wife still didn't have to work. That's just bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. 312-981-7200. That's our phone number. If you know of any schemes that you remember, some sort of like classic schemes, or if you've been part of them, had one happen to you. You ever get pulled into a scheme there, Tom?
Well, it's not technically a scheme, but I would say when I was a Cub Scout and had to sell popcorn.
That's not a scheme.
It's not a scheme, but it felt like one. You have to buy all this popcorn, try to sell it.
So wait, Cub Scouts, you sell popcorn?
Yeah. We were always a step behind the Girl Scouts because, come on, the Girl Scouts have the cookies.
They've got great cookies.
They're amazing cookies.
Yeah.
They've literally branded, you know, they've licensed them out. It's a multi-million-dollar business here.
Yeah.
Boy Scout popcorn, I mean, it's good popcorn. They've got gourmet stuff, you know? Like
So the Boy Scouts were like, we got to come up with something. Popcorn.
Like I said, it's decent popcorn. It's pretty good popcorn.
Now, was it microwave popcorn?
No. It would come in like a tin. You know what I mean?
Oh, so like Garrett's.
Like Garrett's, yeah. Yeah. And they would have Chicago mix, you know, your cheese and caramel.
Ooh,
and then
that's
they would
good
do,
stuff.
They had like dessert popcorn, it was like coated in chocolate. It wasn't bad popcorn. It's just that, you know, most of the time when you're going door to door,
yeah,
they're like, oh, sorry, I spent all my money on these delicious Girl Scout cookies.
You know, I was lucky enough to have gone to many Hawks games and sat in a box, a private box, many times. And when you're in the private box at the UC, you know, you have food and mm-hmm. there's you got beer.
Chicken tenders.
Yeah. They had lobster mac and cheese. Oh, I would eat the hell out of that. Anyway, the dessert cart comes by each suite. And you can go in and just go nuts and get a bunch of dessert. But I'm not a big dessert guy. But what they also had on the dessert cart was bags of Garrett popcorn.
Which are irresistible.
Oh, God. I'd get a bag, and it's the Chicago mix, and I'd get a bag of that and just chow down on it. Yeah. So, anyway. Hold on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about scams and schemes. Have you ever been a part of one? Do you remember some of the legendary ones? All of the ones that I'm reading are real. They all happened. And so if you've ever been a part of a scam or you remember some sort of legendary ones, call us up. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200.
Hey, it's Nick DiGilio on WGN. So, Tom, obviously, you've seen Saturday Night Fever, right?
Yep.
Now, when Saturday Night Fever came out in 1977, at the end of 1977, it became obviously, you know, a phenomenon. The disco craze kicked off because of it. It wasn't just a very popular movie. It changed culture. So, I don't know if this has ever happened before. Maybe it has. But because it was so popular, and it was rated R, a hard R, you've seen it. That's an R-rated movie. So Paramount, who released it, I don't really know if this has ever been done since, unless somebody knows. They released a PG-rated version of it so that they could make more money, so kids could see it.
Deadpool 2.
Oh, that's right, Deadpool 2, right.
They did, took a page right out of Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah. And they cleaned up with it because kids wanted to see it. I, of course, saw the R-rated version because my parents, they took me to see it. I saw 9,000 R-rated movies by the time I was 7. But, yeah, they released the PG-rated version because they wanted kids to see it. And then they did, like, a family-friendly ad campaign for it. And they made a second round of money. Because that movie was huge. That movie was huge. But yeah, I'd forgotten about Deadpool 2. Did Deadpool 2 make money rated PG?
Yeah, it did all right, but most of those kids were getting into the R-rated version.
Look, when I saw both Deadpools, you know, the theaters had kids in them.
Yeah, I didn't. When I was working, because that came out when I was still working in a movie theater, and I didn't let any kids in. I petitioned management. I was like, put a sign out there. If they're under the age of 17 and not accompanied by a parent or a guardian of some sort, an adult at the very least, that isn't some guide that they got off the street to buy them a ticket, which at that point, really... But I was just like, yeah, if you're not here with your parents, I'm not letting you into that movie. I'm not being responsible for that.
Yeah. All right. We're talking about scams and schemes. Some of the more famous ones, if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, if you remember some of them or you've been a part of them. We still have more schemes from this article that people actually made money on, surprisingly. Here's Mike on WGN. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, when I was in the Navy before I retired out in Virginia Beach, there was this guy and his wife worked at one of the local banks, and she used to talk about how much money was in the night deposits on Monday morning during the big tourist season from all the bars. Well, he built a thing that looked like a safe, and him and a couple of his buddies went by, and they set it in front of the bank about 11 o'clock at night, and they put a sign up saying night deposit out of order.
Oh, my God.
Put inside night deposit. Well... then they went back about 4 in the morning and threw it in a truck, and they say there was hundreds of thousands of dollars they
God.
Come up with. And the feds couldn't get involved because it never made it to the bank. It had to be handled by the local police.
Oh, that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
So many people
crazy.
Just pulled up and seen night deposit out of order. And
yeah.
It's a big safe-looking thing. They just opened the slot and dropped it right in.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Well, so do we know what happened after that? Were there consequences for these guys?
Well... he told me about it years later that he'd done it, but they never got caught.
They never got caught.
They was 2 Navy divers.
That's crazy. That's a crazy story, Mike.
He didn't tell about those statute of limitations, I thought.
Yep. So. All right, Mike, thanks, buddy. All right, take care. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Phony night deposit. They set up a phony night deposit safe and then got away with hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely genius. Oh, you know what? Here's a good grift. From when I was working, the movie theater, we had this guy who we kept a stack of free passes, and we'd give them out. Like if you had a hole punch rewards program, if you got enough hole punches or something,
yeah.
You get a free pass.
Yeah, and this was at you used to work at the 400 yes. Theater in Rogers Park.
Yes. Oh God, if they find out, they'll kill me. Anyway, so what he would do is, you know, we had a button on our POS system. You know, for adult ticket, kid ticket, senior ticket, whatever. And there was one for free pass, $0. So what he would do is someone would come in, I want to see a movie, $8.50, please. He'd take the $8.50, he'd ring it in as a pass. It would print a ticket so they could go in and then he'd pocket the 850.
Oh man,
that was a real serious grift that went on for a while.
Wow, man.
And they only got caught because we started looking at the readouts at the end of the night. The managers would see it and they'd be like, how are there so many passes?
Yeah.
He was too greedy. He was far
and he
too
got
greedy.
Caught.
He got caught. No charges were pressed.
But he was fired.
They fired the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Never saw head or tail of him ever again.
There was a girl that worked at, when I worked at McDonald's, and of course this was a very long time ago, when I worked at McDonald's, there was a girl who got busted for not ringing things up. And just taking the money and pocketing
classic.
It and not putting it in the drawer.
Classic grift.
And I'll tell you something else. That's hard to do at McDonald's because everything...
Well, you got to send it back, right? You got to send back the order.
Yeah. Well, it's not just that, but she would like write the order down instead of ringing it up because you can't... I mean, you know, you got a computer thing here and,
sure.
and it's proof that...
There's an order.
So at the end of the night, the managers would have to count down the drawers. And
right.
if there's a discrepancy... That's it.
Yeah.
But this girl did this for a while, from what I heard.
Yeah. And the drawers were zeroed out because there was no
items
wrong in.
It didn't mess with the drawers. No, it didn't affect the drawer, the money inside her drawers. I didn't can't even believe I said that.
Oh, it took me a second there.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Scams and schemes. We got more of them that are all real. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is Rob on WGN. Hi, Rob.
How you doing, Nick?
Yeah, what's up?
Love this program, man. I'm up late at night listening to you.
Well, I appreciate it.
One scam that I fell for when I first fell in love with DJing. My father told me, don't fall for DJ battle scams. What the scam is, all the DJs come together to battle to find out who's the best. And it was related to a college that I was popular, I knew. What happened was me and my buddy, we got some albums together and our needles, and we went to participate in a DJ battle, and they had already had the winner picked out, and we got, for our work that we did, we call it work, we got some suckers. And on the way back to the L with our records, we got beat up.
That doesn't sound like a good night, Rob.
It did not. It was not a good night at all.
Yeah,
and I still remember that. So whenever people say, and this was in 1982, whenever people say they got a DJ battle going on, I tell the DJs, don't fall for DJ battle scams, because the only people that really benefit are the promoter.
Right. Right. Yeah. That sounds like a scam. That sounds like a scam right there. I'm sorry that happened to you, Rob. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Thank you, Rob. We're talking about real scams and real schemes that are out there. And we've got this article that I'm still going through. Some of these are unbelievable. I got to say, some of these, you can't believe that people fell for it. You know? You can't. Here's Larry on WGN. We're talking schemes. Hi, Larry.
Hi there.
Yeah.
This was about 35 years ago. I worked for a major rent-a-car company at the big airport in Chicago. And parents used to, they used to rent cars for their sons and daughters to go to the senior prom. Well, upon returning the car, plenty of times, other fellows and I used to meet the car renters at the entry gate.
Yeah.
Would ask if they had gassed up and do they have the receipt to prove it.
Right.
At the time, that car company was charging out like $2.50 a gallon when you could buy it down the street for 69 cents a gallon. So we used to always tell, you know, these are usually young kids whose parents rented the car for them. Okay, hey, give me $5 or $10. I'll write it on the ticket. that the car came back full. Otherwise, they're going to charge you, you know, $2.50 a gallon, and then that comes up to be a whole lot of money.
Right.
But we did this for quite a few days because the car company that I had worked for had 2,500 cars on their lot at a Chicago O'Hare.
Yeah.
Okay, then somebody starts getting greedy. One guy got busted. Management cracked down on all of us. But we used to go home, just like a bartender with his or her tips, we used to go home overstuffed pockets.
Yeah.
Well, and then to make it even worse, I had another job where I worked for a CPA in the accounting room. And guys used to chew gum, put it on the bottom of their shoes. That went on. A couple of my coworkers wound up getting arrested for.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Larry, take it easy.
Have a good night.
All right. I don't know what the statute of limitations is with all these callers calling in saying that they're scamming people. You sure you want to come on the air on a 50,000 watt radio station that reaches 36 states and admit to some of these scams that you actually did? I was just talking about some schemes and scams that maybe happened to you, or some famous ones that you remember from the news or pop culture or something along those lines. So, all right. famous schemes and scams. I got a bunch more stories here. Some of them are really hard to believe that people would fall for it. There are a lot of gullible people out there. So 312-981-7200. That's our number. If you would like to join us, the phone lines are open for more scheme and scam conversations here on 720 WGN. Here till 4 o'clock, and then we'll head over to Bradley Place for some early morning news from the TV side here on WGN. Right now, let's get into the newsroom. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio, here till 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock, stay tuned, because we head over to Bradley Place for the TV side of WGN, get some early morning news from that great team. And then your morning drive starts at 5 with the one and only Bob Surratt, right here on 720 WGN. Talking about some actual scams and schemes that people actually made money on, and some real scams that maybe you remember. 312-981-7200. Here's Kitty on WGN. Go ahead, Kitty.
Yes, good morning. Well, this is a scam, you know, to, you know, lose weight. And they send you a pair of plastic shorts. You have to have a canister vacuum cleaner. And you disconnect the hose, put the hose on there, turn it on. It's supposed to make you lose weight real quick. Of course, it didn't work.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
And
Do you remember that one? I do. Yes, I do.
Oh. Real quick, another one, they sent you one of those plastic, like, sweatsuits, and you make sure the water in the bathtub is really hot, and you put in two blue tablets, and it's supposed to make you lose weight. Do you remember that one?
I do not remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how you can get scammed, and you're so innocent.
Yeah.
I think women fall for these scams more than men, don't you think so?
I don't know. I don't know. Not sure of it. All right, Kitty, thanks.
I listen to you. Listen every day. Have a good day now.
All right, take care. Yeah, I mean, you know, so many people want to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
and there are
so many,
you know,
schemes and
yeah,
diets and plans
that don't work, that, you know, that claim to be working.
Yeah, my cousin was in a pyramid scheme surrounding that. Had to do with, like, these wraps that you'd put on around
yeah,
your body.
I remember. Those things were big.
I gave her such a hard time about it, and she just wouldn't hear me. I was just like, no, you're in a pyramid scheme. You're selling a pyramid scheme right now.
Yeah.
So it goes on a pyramid scheme. It's like, oh, really? How many people do you have below you? How many people below them?
Yeah.
It's terrible, because she just needed a job. She just needed
yeah.
money.
Yeah.
And that's why I felt bad. I wasn't mad at her. I just felt bad.
Yeah. Here's Mary on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Nick. How are you?
I'm okay.
This scheme is, I think it's been around the country, I've heard, for 2 or 3 years. It's really sad, though. And I've gotten the call 2 or 3 times where a young lad, you know, says, Grandma. And if you're, you know, if you are a grandma, you'll probably say, yeah. And they said, they have this really sad, scratchy voice. And they go, I was on vacation in Canada, and I got in an accident, and I was in the hospital. And I lost all my money. And he says, I want to come home, you know, and they asked him to send money. And I think there's probably a lot of sad senior citizens that probably send money.
Yeah, but would they not recognize? Would they not recognize the voice not being their grandkid?
Well, it was fun. I think if you just fall into it, you don't think about it. The first time it happened to me, you know, I said, "Who is this?" And he said, "Michael." I said, "I don't have a grandson named Michael. Goodbye."
Yeah, yeah, that's but, a good. That's a good thing
a
to do.
Back, ask. I had one about a month ago that called me, and I stopped at the end and I said, "Can I ask you something?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "Do you have a grandma?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "How would you feel if somebody called your grandma and scammed, you know, thousands of dollars out of her bank?" But it's really sad.
Yeah, it is. Okay,
there's probably a lot of seniors that fall for that. You
yeah.
know?
Okay. Thanks, Mary.
They love the. Thanks. Bye bye.
312-981-7200. Yeah, these scammers, they basically they have no conscience. So let's see. Here's Will on WGN. Go ahead, Will.
Yeah. Hi there. Story from when I was a kid. My dad was a lawyer for an insurance company in Massachusetts, and he had a man who came and worked with him for a while, and then one day the guy just stopped showing up. Well, a few days later, the FBI showed up, and it turned out this man was suspected of being D.B. Cooper.
Oh, come on, really?
Yeah.
For those young people out there, D.B. Cooper, do you know the legend of D.B. Cooper, Tom?
Yeah, he's that dude who jumped out of a plane. He stole a bunch of money. And
stole a bunch of money and jumped out of a plane. Nobody was ever able to find him. That's amazing. The guy was... So what happened?
You know, they never found that particular guy. And this was probably before it was a really big deal, even before I think the movie came out.
Right.
The Pursuit of D.B. Cooper.
Yeah.
That movie. So my dad wound up found some books about him and stuff like that, which I found around the house. And that's how I learned about D.B. Cooper, was I read the books that we had.
Yeah. I mean, and then the movie was with Treat Williams, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember I enjoyed the movie. I mean, it was a long time ago. You know, I think it was in the late 70s, I think, is when that movie came out, or early 80s. But, yeah, that's crazy, though. The FBI shows up and says, hey, that might have been D.B. Cooper.
Yeah, basically, yes. That's what
happened
there.
That's crazy. Wow, that's a weird and great story, Will. Thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
D.B. Cooper might have been working with his dad. Jeez. Yeah, that's a legendary story right there, the whole D.B. Cooper thing. I wonder whatever happened to him. Jumps out of a plane, you know, authorities are searching everywhere for him, and just completely disappears. So, yeah, it's an interesting story. Tom, have you ever seen the Treat Williams movie, The Pursuit of D.B. Cooper?
I have not.
It's pretty good. I haven't seen it in a long time. I remember liking it, though.
Better or worse than Deep Rising?
It's not as good as Deep Rising.
All right, cool.
I mean, Deep Rising? What are we talking about here? Speaking of Deep Rising, we got to get our friend Kevin J. O'Connor back on.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll give him a call, see if he's got...
I mean, obviously, he's not... I don't think they're working right now.
Nah.
But Kevin's a great guy. He's fantastic in Deep Rising. He's hilarious in Deep Rising.
So. What is that? The girl from Ipanema.
Yeah, no, that movie's great. That was one of those movies, another one, you know, we've talked about this in the past, movies that completely surprise you. I expected nothing from that movie, and I thought it was so entertaining. And, you know, I mean, you're with me on this. We love big monster movies.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, this could be cool, and then I ended up just loving it.
There's a lot of that guys in that movie.
Yes, there are.
Like, not to downplay.
Well, Kevin's one of them, yeah.
Yeah, Kevin's a total that guy.
Oh, no, he admits it. When I've talked to Kevin, he's like, yeah, people don't know my name. They'll look at me and go, hey, weren't you in that one movie?
Well, I would just scream, Benny!
Yeah.
Well, Benny, baby!
Listen, the next time we talk to Kevin, get him to tell you some There Will Be Blood stories. Because he's got some unbelievable stories about not just working with P.T. Anderson, but the insanity of Daniel Day-Lewis and how intense and unbelievable he is and how it's crazy to work with him. Also, he's got some not flattering stories about Joaquin Phoenix when he was in The Master. And I was not surprised by those stories. And, you know, the stories of how he behaved on the set of Joker, too. He's one of those guys. He's one of those actors, you know.
Method.
And so is what's his face? Jordan Catalano.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell's his name? Jordan Catalano.
Who cares his name is?
Jordan Catalano.
I don't know.
Jordan Catalano.
You can keep saying Jordan Catalano to me. I'm not going to suddenly remember who
he is. I can't remember.
He's
in
30 Seconds to Mars.
He was in Requiem for a Dream, Blade Runner 2049. He played Jordan Catalano. I can't believe I'm blanking
on Jared Leto.
There it is, Jared Leto. He's another one that was on the set of Blade Runner. He was like, he did some terrible things on the set of Blade Runner. So, all right, let's see. We're talking about scams here.
I have a picture pinned to my wall. An image of you and of me, and we're laughing with love at it all. Look at our life now.
Mm-hmm. Tattered and torn. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio, here till 4 o'clock. We're wrapping up the show, and lots of people are calling in, remembering some scams and schemes that were very popular, and I've got a bunch of them here in this article, but we've got a bunch of people on the phone who want to share their thoughts as too. So here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right. What's up?
Hey, a long time ago, my brother used to work at a drive-in theater out near Dixon, Illinois, and he used to take the admissions going in, and he'd give them a ticket stub, and then people would throw them out the window, and he would walk down the drive and pick the stubs back up and resell them. That way, when people asked if they had a ticket stub, they had them, but he would then pocket some money.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a scam. You said it was in Dixon, Illinois?
Yeah, the drive-in theater is still open. Actually,
well, it's the Midway, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's my friends Mike and Mia Kurz run that drive-in now.
Yep. This was a long time ago, back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, my friends run that drive-in.
His buddies would come through and they would suspect something and go up and ask him for their ticket stub, and they would always have one, so there. He never got caught.
There's a scam for you right there. All right, Robert, thanks.
All right, later.
Yeah. Midway Drive-In, by the way, showing Bill and Ted Face the Music this weekend. And Weird Science. That's the second feature. I'm going to watch Bill and Ted this weekend. No question about it.
I'll throw down the $20.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt. Yeah, the first one came. The second one came out in 1991. It's been that long.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wait almost 30 years to make the sequel. So, let's see. Here's Karen on WGN. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
So mine was just one of those Facebook GoFundMe things. This young college guy was expecting to win some kind of beer prize and didn't get it. And so he started a GoFundMe page saying, please, I need my beer.
I need my beer?
Yeah, because he didn't get it in his contest that he expected to win.
Uh-huh.
So he put a GoFundMe out there, I need my beer.
Did he make any money?
He made tens of thousands of dollars.
You got to be kidding me.
Paid off his school bills and everything.
Did he get beer?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, all right.
He gave some away to charities, too.
Beer?
No, the money.
Oh, okay. All right, Karen.
Money he didn't need for his own uses.
All right. Thanks, Karen.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, Tom, he's a college student. Of course he needs his beer.
Yeah, I can confirm. That's that's part of the diet. You know, they when you're in college, your intestinal system, you know, it kind of all changes where you're capable of running on nothing but ramen noodles and light beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing what biology can teach us about people between the ages of about 18 and 23.
I've told you about when we would go down to Champaign, because I had friends who went to school in Champaign. We'd just go down for the weekend and get drunk. And there was a bar. And I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was on Green Street. And it was downstairs. You had to go downstairs. So it was like in a basement kind of thing. And they had 10-cent beer night. Or quarter beer night. It might have been a quarter beer night. And it was just insane. Just insane. Just college students getting completely ripped. The floors were all wet. It was just crazy. This was also the bar. Maybe someone can remember the name of the bar if you lived in Champaign or you went to school in Champaign. I think it's closed now. But at midnight every night, they would play American Pie and the entire bar would sing it, which was a nightmare because I can't stand that song. But that was the tradition. Every night at midnight, American Pie. And they would have like quarter beer night or something, and everybody would just be ripped. I mean, just completely annihilated.
Blethered.
Like wet tables. The floors were always wet. They served all the beer in empty plastic cups, obviously. Plastic cups strewn everywhere. I can't remember the name of the bar. It's going to drive me crazy. Maybe somebody knows. American Pie, they sang it every night at midnight in this bar. It was a downstairs bar. It was on Green Street in Champaign. And if someone knows the name of the bar, 312-981-7200. All right, here's Tony on WGN. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right.
I've got a scam and a scheme for you this morning.
The scam,
people were calling random hotels. They would talk to the front desk and say, hey, patch me through to room 203 or whatever random room. They would patch it through, and then that caller would act as the hotel and say, hey, this is the front desk. Your credit card didn't go through. Can you give me that number?
Oh, again? Sure. Yeah.
And I thought I made sure to tell my mom about that one. She travels a lot, and, you know, I thought that's one you always hear of scams that you go, how could anybody fall for that? Well, I could see somebody fall for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. If someone calls and claims to be the front desk and stuff, I mean, how do you know that that's not the case, you know?
Right, they kind of catch off guard. Nobody ever calls the hotel room phone, you
right.
know? So.
Right, right. Wow.
So I thought I'd throw that one out there. And then as a scheme, back in the pre-computer days, I knew a guy that... It was a service business, and they everything was carbon copies. So he wrote on the top copy, which was the store copy, with a pen that had no ink in it. So it pushed through the carbon copy.
Right.
And he knew all the totals and everything off the top of his head, and then he would give the customer a receipt that said one total, and then he'd go back and rewrite the original and then pocket the difference in cash.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It's scandalous what people do, huh?
Yeah, it is. Okay, Tony, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Nick.
Take care. John on WGN. Go ahead, John.
Nick, you were talking about Saturday Night Fever. Did you know that there were a lot of counterfeit copies of that record available?
No, I didn't.
There was such a demand for it that the mafia got in on it. There's a publication called Goldmine, and they were analyzing record labels and stuff, and they said that the mafia got into counterfeiting the record. Also, you know, Saturday Night Fever was released before there was a video craze.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that it did better in video after it came out?
I'm sure it did well in video. It's a classic movie. I mean, you know, and when video... tapes became popular in the early 80s, I'm sure Saturday Night Fever was right near the top in terms of sales and rentals. No doubt in my mind.
It was on RSO, which was owned by Robert Stiglitz,
right,
who managed Cream and all that. And I've heard Clapton was kind of mad because he thought that Stiglitz was devoting more time to disco than he was their career.
Well, do you know what? He made a lot of money. So, you know, I don't know
why. He made a ton of money. In Greece.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Greece was released before there was video, too.
Yeah, that's right. 1978. Okay, John, thanks.
Okay.
All right. Grease, man. Now they have the every once in a while at the Music Box, they do the Grease sing-along, where you can sing along with Grease.
Yeah, because that's what I want to spend my Friday night doing, singing along with a bunch of people to Grease. Seriously.
Yeah.
You don't even need to make it. It doesn't even need to be the sing-along version. They'll just sing. They'll just sing it.
Yeah.
I find that to be incredibly annoying.
I've not seen Grease in years.
You know, it's...
I mean, I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked it.
It's good. You know, it's good. It's Grease. It's Grease. You know, what's there to say about Grease?
It's a nice place.
What, Grease? Jeez. Oh, boy.
I've never been there. You ask Vivian about it.
Yeah, I will. I will. I'll be like... It's nothing like the movie.
No.
Grease.
Not at all. Not at all. All right, here's one. I literally saw this on GoFundMe. Send me and my family to Disneyland because my children need this experience and we are poor. I think they were asking for $10,000 for a family of four. The kicker was she lived in the UK and could have gone to Paris Disneyland, but she was asking for triple the money so that they can go to the one in America, and there was no explanation as to why. Don't fall for the scams, man. You know what I'm talking about? Hey, Tom, besides our regular Friday features, what's happening on the show?
We're going to bring back a favorite segment of mine, Ask Dr. Nick.
Oh boy. All right. All right, Ask Dr. Nick. That's part of the regular features as well on the Friday night Nick DiGilio show. Stay tuned right now. You got some great radio coming up. We're going to head over to the TV side of WGN for some early morning news from that great team. And then... Bob Surratt has your morning drive at 5. All right, let's go to the news.